This is Jim Alger, and this is Common Sense.
Ask not what your country can do for you.
Why do the Republicans hate America?
Their only play right now in Congress is to hope the Democratic Party fails.
It's not even us in the U.S. It's us in China now.
It's us in China.
It's going to be us
in Russia and China.
It's the EU. We are in the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression.
The buzzword of the day is not torture. The buzzword of the day is enhanced interrogation techniques. Can we just agree to call it torture?
Ask what you can do for your country.
Hope you're having a great day in Washington, D.C., or wherever in the world you're tuning the show in today. This is Common Sense, the show that cuts through the spin of the anti-American right-wing nuts and brings it to you straight.
During our show, we'll help you, the listener, try and understand the week's events and what we as a nation can do about it. Our job here is not to change your mind, but provide political perspective and act as your voice to power.
In short, we are here to have a discussion and help you replace the spin with common sense. Good evening, everyone. Live from Washington, D.C., we are here with Common Sense, the show that is here to cut through the spin of the anti-right-wing rhetoric like we just heard. The first thing up today, we got a couple of things we're going to talk about today. First thing up on the docket today is going to be what's going on in Washington, D.C., which is a raging war over Nancy Pelosi's comments yesterday that the Central Intelligence Agency lied to her about advising her of when the torture was taking place and the waterboarding was taking place of detainees at Gitmo. This has sparked a furious debate by the right wing that is completely up in arms, that the and is rushing to the defense of, as Steny Hoyer calls them, the torture warriors, or I'm sorry, the anti-terrorism fighters, they are suddenly rushed to the defense of the Central Intelligence Agency, which really, to me, ladies and gentlemen, brings to mind a very interesting question, and this will be the first question I have up for the day, which is, where was this GOP when the Bush administration saw fit to release and expose a CIA operative's identity for political purposes? 1-888-228-4494 is the phone number to call. We'd like to hear from everyone. We are on Twitter. At Jim Alger is the Twitter name to call in, and we can hear your comments via Twitter. I'd really like to get a lot of people calling in and see what your opinion is on these issues. With me today, live via satellite, we have Mike is out in Los Angeles, California. Say hello to everyone, Mike.
Good evening.
And we've got Chris from New Jersey is here, and she's on as well. Chris, say hi.
Hello.
How are you guys doing today?
Good.
It's a good day here in Los Angeles.
We're gonna start off by talking about this the whole terrorism issue and the Nancy Pelosi issue. As you guys are aware, basically, Washington, D.C. is in flames right now, and the GOP is trying to burn Nancy Pelosi's house down to the ground. my argument is that, first of all, I mean, to me, none of this matters. I think this is a complete and total, utter fiasco. It does not matter what Nancy Pelosi knew and when she knew it. She wasn't in power. She didn't have control. She couldn't stop it. She was not in the chain of command. There was nothing that she could do to stop this. The information that she received was classified. So even had she received the information, there's not much she can do about it.
Well, I definitely agree. I think that they need to focus more on Dick Cheney and Don Rumsfeld, because this all came from the top, as you said.
Well, then you've got to ask if this doesn't matter, if she didn't have the power to do anything about it, why is she coming now and saying this?
Well, because the GOP has got her under fire. Basically, here's the thing. The GOP is trying to say, you knew about it, so you can't investigate it now because your ship's going to go down with ours. So therefore, no investigations, just move on, nothing to see here. That's their entire plan. Their entire plan is to sit here and say, if we go down, you go down, because you knew. And, right. And therefore heading off any investigation as to who knew what, where, when, and who did what. I find it very ironic that the Law and Order Party is supporting willful violation of the law and then moving forward. Now,
we have several issues here. We have, you know, the issue of torture, and it's amazing that I have to say this, but whether or not we should do that, I mean, I think we know we should not be. And then we have the issue of, you know, if what she's saying is accurate and the CIA is lying to Congress, that in and of itself is a serious issue. And I don't think it can be left at, oh, they lied to me. I think people have to be called to the carpet for that now. I mean, if somebody heads need to roll, if somebody was lying to Congress in the CIA.
Right. Well, I definitely agree with that. Because that, although that's not the most important issue with these, the whole torture problem, there's a separate issue, which is, you know, if indeed these accusations against the CIA are true, then the CIA actually broke laws. And some criminal charges would obviously follow.
I'm not 100% sure of misleading the Gang of Four in Congress. And for those who don't know, the Gang of Four is the four highest-ranking members of Congress, Senate and House side, that are briefed on classified information. The problem is the way that these classified briefings work is they walk into a room, a private room, and they basically hand out, you know, here's the briefing notes, this is what's going on, this is what we're doing, and oh, you can't talk about it. So, and this is the real kicker. If Nancy Pelosi were to be enraged by what she heard and stormed out of the room and grabbed the first camera she saw and screamed to the American people what would happen or what's going on, she would be in jail.
She'd be in jail.
And in fact, you might remember back when all this stuff was going on, when it first came out that we were waterboarding, the Bush administration wanted to go after some of the New York Times and said, oh, my God, how dare you? It's classified. Who leaked classified information? Who in the CIA gave this away? And they were attacking the CIA for leaking the information in the first place. Now, all of a sudden, we're defending the CIA, and the CIA is basically the second coming of Christ himself to the right wing. And what I'm basically saying is it's all BS. This entire thing is BS. The GOP is excellent at this. They love to change the subject. They have us, even us, talking about Nancy Pelosi as opposed to talking about whether or not we should be tortured in the first place. They've changed the argument to, you know, we don't torture, to, well, maybe we did torture, but we got good information out of it. And now it's, well, you guys knew too. This is Bush all over again. And I am going to ask my conservative friend here, Mike, to respond to this. What is with the GOP in their continuation of defending George W. Bush and his policies? When will these guys figure out that the only way to salvage their party is to throw this guy out of the bus and move on?
Well, I can't speak for the GOP and what their plan of
action
is. Not going
to stop you from trying to get
you.
But I would note that it was kind of interesting. When the pictures came out of Abu Ghraib, am I saying that right? Abu Ghraib?
Abu Ghraib.
There was pretty much across the board condemnation of that. You know, both Republican and Democrats were saying that this is disgusting, this is despicable. Now that it's more and more coming out that some of this might have been ordered from the top or wink and a nod, however it happens, now we're starting to get the interesting position where people are trying to defend it. And I wouldn't want to be in that position.
Well, doesn't this bring up a bigger point and really kind of as for the GOP, as supporters of the military, as much as they love to wrap themselves in every armed forces flag that they can find and act as if they have it all when it comes to the armed forces, we have literally hundreds of members of the military who have been kicked out, thrown in jail, or are in jail as we against prisoners, I would argue prisoners of war. And what we have is no one above, I believe, the grade of lieutenant has been prosecuted. He was acquitted. has been prosecuted for what appears to have been orders from the Vice President of the United States.
Then you got to ask, why was he acquitted?
I don't know why he was acquitted. What I'm saying is that when we're talking about orders coming from on high to the lower people, what's happening is all the military, the rank-and-file military, is taking the brunt for this, and no one's defending them. No one's protecting them, but all the people who put the policies in place are getting a walk.
So
don't investigate, don't look, nothing to see here, have a nice day, move on. Let's get past this, let's forget about it. I'm sorry, as much as I support the president, even he is dead wrong on this. And the fact that Congress is in flames right now shows that he's dead wrong. Americans care. But Americans in general care about it. And I think that we need to really ask ourselves where we are as a nation when it comes to sitting on our laurels and allowing this nonsense to move forward.
Well, speaking as one who was in the military myself, there is no excuse. And this needs to be rooted out. Our military has enjoyed a position of, and you know, I'm sure we exaggerate this, you know, wanting to support our side, but we try to take the moral high ground. We try to take the, you know, we're for democracy, we're for freedom, we do not torture. We're for support and liberating people. Now, as far as we've strayed from that in certain arenas, you take that away, and it's going to hurt us. It's going to hurt us as far as our support. It's going to hurt us as far as how our POWs get treated, how our army is looked upon. It's absolutely unacceptable. And for people to be playing political games with this is quite disgusting.
Well, they've been playing political games for quite a while.
I think that part of the problem is that the GOP is a lost party. And technically, they're a party in transition, but for all intents and purposes, they're a lost party. And they're just waffling around. They have practically no base. Their numbers have dwindled to a dismal, you know, almost nothing. And with the exception of their conservative extreme right, they need a cause. They need a cause, and they need a champion. And so their whole strategy is, well, we didn't torture. Oh, wait, no. Well, it wasn't waterboarding. It was enhanced interrogation tactics. And, you know, then it was, well, whatever it was, you know, we got actionable intelligence. And now, because they don't want to focus on the real problem, which is that they have no leadership and they have messed up with George W. Bush's administration for the past 8 years. Now it's, oh my God, Pelosi knew. This is horrible. And so it is a whole smoke and mirrors play, and it's disgusting. And, you know, it's at this point, although many people in Washington didn't want to go to a truth commission or whatnot, they almost have to, because America is just fed up on the left and the right. And there comes a point where it's like, okay, wait, who do we believe? Are we supposed to believe our elected officials, or do we have to almost exonerate or have them exonerate themselves by having these
Okay, I think we're losing Chris here. Unfortunately, her sound is breaking up. As usual, the show is known for its... As usual, the show is known for its technical difficities.
Can't have it going too smooth. That just wouldn't be right.
We certainly cannot do that.
Hearing Chris breaking up there a little bit, hopefully we'll get that straightened out soon. I believe she was making the point of this being a leadership issue within the GOP.
It is an issue in the GOP. As Chris was saying, the GOP is a lost party, and they are they really are kind of all over the place. You're seeing this lurching back and forth in who's going to lead them. They have Newt Gingrich is their new person they're trying to trot out now, and they're trying to push Sarah Palin to the back as being too divisive. Ironically, Newt Gingrich is now lurching to the right. He's trying to catch up to Sarah Palin as they go to the right. You're seeing the party itself divide on the right, whereas the Democrats on the left are getting a little bit antsy, but they're still okay. And on that regard, This week we saw a big brouhaha over Barack Obama's flip-flopping, so to speak, on the releasing of torture pictures of detainees.
Right. I think on this issue you really have to ask yourself, is this of benefit to the country as a whole or not, now that we're uncovering more and more what's been going on, to release pictures of this to the, you know, the world and the public? It looks like the president is deciding now that this would do more harm than good. I think all of us want to know the truth. We want to acknowledge what's gone on, and we want to keep this type of thing from happening in the past. We were supposed to have had things in place already that were to keep it from happening in the first place, but obviously we've been experiencing failures. I don't know. How do people feel about this?
I think that the that it really comes down to, if I really have to ask or answer that, I would say that people don't like the idea that we tortured. There is clearly a...
Oh, I think that almost goes without saying.
Yeah.
I think there's clearly an inflammatory effect.
That's a good way of putting it. They could be considered inflammatory.
The military command has said that the last time they released pictures, attacks against our troops rose dramatically in the 10 days after those pictures came out of Abu Ghraib. And so there is a effect. It's the military commanders who have pleaded not to release the pictures. And I would argue that releasing the pictures for public consumption is not really necessary. Now, I may get some pushback, and I'm curious to see how people feel about this out there. And I'm going to throw this number out every couple of minutes, 888-228-4494. Feel free to call in and tell me off if you'd like to.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's important to note there is a difference between releasing the pictures to the public and making these pictures available to a prosecutorial agency,
right,
who's going to go forward and get to the bottom of the truth. At some point, I think these pictures have to come out. It has to be vetted that, you know what, we did this. However, maybe down the road after we did this and all those, not just the underlings involved, have been held accountable, X amount of people were prosecuted, this many people went to jail, this many people did this, then you can say this is a whole book and we're going to release it, as opposed to drip, 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 and then the Middle East gets more inflamed and then our troops get attacked more. I don't think anyone who's listening wants to see our troops come home to Dover Air Force Base. None of us want to see that.
I think you hit upon the larger issue there. The larger issue is not whether or not pictures get released. The larger issue is, how on earth did this happen? Why are we even having this discussion? Why are people supporting torture? This was across the board not allowed. And now we find ourselves, well, what do we do with pictures of it?
I'll tell you, if
people aren't, called to task for this.
Well, I'll answer your question.
Things aren't put in place to keep this from happening.
Here is an interesting question and hypothesis, and that is, this happened because we wanted it to.
No.
The dead silence shows the power of that remark. This happened because we wanted it to. I'll give you two words. Never again. That's what we said after 9/11. How did this happen? Never again. How did you guys let this happen? Do whatever it takes, but go get the people who did this. There is something that Joe Scarborough said. I don't like quoting this guy because I think he's a buffoon. But there is something that Joe Scarborough said that he is right about. It happens once in a while. Even a broken clock is right.
He has injected himself into this issue, so we can't help but mention
him. We're going to have an interesting conversation about Joe Scarborough shortly. He made a comment on his show that we, the American people, demand that our government do whatever it takes at all costs, go get the people who did this. They killed 3,000 of our people at the time. We didn't know how many thousands. At the time, we were thinking 30,000. We had no clue. Amazingly enough, the number 3,000 somehow, in a very twisted way, became bearable after thinking 30,000 were going to be lost that day. But we were in shell shock. Do you remember when this whole Pelosi thing was going on? This was coming up on the 1 year, or either coming up on or just past the 1 year anniversary of 9/11, a major milestone for the country that was really suffering from shock and still in shock. The fact that we gave Congress and the president carte blanche for years shows you how much the American people didn't rise up against the war in Iraq. We didn't rise up at all. There were some people that did, but it was a clear minority of the population that rose up against the war. So if you want to ask yourself how this happened, the truth is we as a nation need to look ourselves in the mirror and say we turned a blind eye because we didn't care. We lived that Jack Bauer moment. We lived it. We said, go stop these guys and you do whatever it takes. Now, I will take this one step further and say, however, that is the job of our government, is not to be reactionary like an individual person is. I don't think there's a listener out here who would say that if they could prevent an attack, they would not break the law. I don't think anyone would say that. I think that we've seen time after time after time throughout both history and just in everyday life that people will willfully and knowingly break the law for what they deem to be the better good. However, each of those people meets a jury of their peers. Each of those people meets an investigative body. The idea that the Republican Party is trying to short-circuit this prior to even getting an investigation going tells me that their argument is bunk. They are worried that they are going to be convicted. That's the problem. That's why you try and stop prosecutions, because you're on the short end of the stick. If you think you're so right and you're so justified, you're not going to be worried about the prosecution. The heavens may fall. But
that's why Cheney's on his press tour.
Well, Cheney is on his press tour for a bunch of reasons. I think that Cheney sits there and talks about people being prosecuted. And I think he's worried about one in particular, people. That people looks a lot like him.
One person, huh?
So I think that we do need to kind of sit down and figure out where we as a nation are going to go with this. We need to either pressure Congress to do something. And the American people are divided on this. They don't – all the pollings are coming back almost split.
On which in particular?
On whether or not we should prosecute.
On whether or not we should prosecute. Because the way I think of this is that, you know, we don't have perfect justice. The best we have is the law. And if the law was broken, as you said, I reiterate that, you know, people have to face the music for what they have done.
Except that George Bush said that same exact thing when the Valerie Plame scandal came out, and he said, you know, whoever is responsible for this will pay. Well, lo and behold, it was Scooter Libby, and then oops, how did he pay? What, did he spend a minute in jail until his sentence was commuted? And whatnot. That's what people have a problem with.
My question is, do they have a problem with that? I mean, where was the outrage when that happened? The Valerie Plame thing was allowed to be the right wing basically used. Okay, let me back this up. For those who aren't familiar with the Valerie Plame thing, let's start there. The Bush administration knowingly and willfully went and exposed the CIA agent's identity.
Wasn't it her husband?
He was a ambassador,
right.
Joe Wilson, and he went down to Africa to go check these claims of yellow cake uranium. When he came back, he said that there was nothing there. George Bush went and said that Iraq was going for the yellow cake uranium, the State of the Union address.
I remember this. The idea was that this was, you know, he was providing evidence against their drive to war in Iraq.
Yeah,
so they wanted to.
Times, op-ed
they wanted to undermine
that.
What
I didn't find in Africa, which was the yellow cake.
I remember that. What I didn't, right.
And then, so they decided to hurt him by undermining his credibility, saying that his wife was in the CIA. The irony is.
Not saying that out of it.
Well, the irony is, so what? Somehow, this is politics. This is how politics is great. Somehow, because his wife was in the CIA, that somehow meant that he was lying about what he saw in Africa.
Right.
It has nothing to do with the other. We're going to take a commercial break here. 1-888-228-4494, 888-228-4494 is our phone number. At Jim Alger is our Twitter address, and we'll be back in 33 seconds.
Have you added up all the hidden costs behind Walmart's prices? The estimated $1.8 billion taxpayers shell out for health care because Walmart doesn't cover their employees. The lost wages of 1.6 million women who had to take Walmart to court to get paid the same as men. The countless manufacturing jobs lost while America's largest corporation became America's biggest importer of Chinese goods. Behind Walmart's profits, the middle class pays the price. America can't afford it any longer.
888-228-4494, 888-228-4494 is our phone number. We are discussing the issue of terror, and as the battle is raging in Washington, D.C., as everyone knows who turns on the TV, the morning talk shows were really going nuts, and Joe Scarborough was having a field day this morning. They seem to be all on their talking points. The whole thing apparently is Nancy Pelosi's fault. It's Bill Clinton's fault. It's everybody else's fault but their own. And now they are trying to short-circuit any investigation whatsoever regarding trying to prosecute people who committed the torturous acts. And I think it's really a shame that we are having this discussion. We are at Jim Alger on Twitter, and we do have a couple of tweets coming in. I really wish you guys would call in as opposed to tweet, because calling in is more fun and interactive. But our Twitter following seems to be extraordinarily shy. We have one tweet from Sonny Stokes, who says, prosecute all involved, including Pelosi, or admit we are what they think. I don't quite know what they mean by we are what they think, but the idea that Nancy Pelosi could be prosecuted for anything is frankly ridiculous on its face. She was not in the power structure. She had no say. And as we said a few minutes ago, would have been barred legally from being able to even bring this up or say anything.
Well, it's an interesting point. What do you do if you are in that position and you know illegal activity is going on?
The thing is, she could have worked behind the scenes. She could have, you know, Jim's going to say, she could have written a letter to her fellow representatives.
Jane Harmon did write a letter and ended up with an NSA wiretap on her phone.
Lovely. One point I would like to make while we're on the subject of torture is that I see way too often in the media that the Jack Bauer, as you said, the 24, oh, we've got to torture these people so we get the information, so we save the lives. It's actually a threat to our people if we engage in this type of behavior, serious threat to people. You know, think back World War II. You know, you're fighting the Americans or you're fighting the Germans or you're fighting the Japanese. You know, there's a difference there. People would go out of their way to surrender to the Americans. That means less casualties. If you're fighting the Germans or the Japanese, you know, you're bound to fight down to the last man. You know what's going to happen to you if you get caught. This type of thing is not protecting our troops. It's not protecting our citizens. It's doing just the opposite.
Could not agree with you more. I think that, and so far we've not seen, well, there's conflicting reports. Dick Cheney's trying to get some stuff released. Cheney is, you have to admire the irony here. Cheney, who could not be found for 8 years to save our lives, is now everywhere. I can't turn on my
TV. Have we found his secret headquarters yet?
Apparently his undisclosed location is quite disclosed now. This guy,
well,
and not
it's one
just
thing.
Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, it's one thing when you're the one making the orders to go torture people. It's another thing when you're out of office and you're the potential victim of being tortured by going to jail. There's silver bracelets. They have a way of directing your behavior toward media outlet.
Do you think that Dick Cheney is trying to save his rear end, or do you think that he really believes this, or a combination of both? Because I'm kind of curious. I mean, I find it difficult to accept when either side makes the argument that president, vice president, whoever is on the other side of the enemy or is committing treason or all these inflammatory remarks. I wonder if he really honestly believes this. The problem is that I have with Dick Cheney is that this guy spent all of his credibility in the first year of being in office. And when we, you know, to me, and me and Mike have had this conversation on several occasions, the instant they said there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. It was absolutely
the credibility issue. I've watched Dick Cheney on YouTube telling us why, point by point, why we should not invade Iraq. And, you know, you watch this, and it's comical and tragic at the same time. After something like that, how can I really give him any credibility?
Well, I can't.
With regard to that question, you know, is Dick Cheney being genuine in his, in pursuing this? Well, the other thing to, you know, that you keep in mind is that, well, George Bush had the same exact information, one would assume. Rumsfeld, Gonzalez, all of them, and they are not out there, you know, trying to get as much FaceTime and airtime as humanly possible. They've actually, you know, went back to their rocks from which they came.
Disappeared into the woodwork.
Exactly.
Yeah, I another point while we're on the topic of whether or not people are going to be prosecuted for this. I mean, how many times have we seen this in different venues? The peons, you know, getting it, they're getting a book thrown at them, while the upper ups, you know, the prosecutions are few and far between.
Well, that's kind of the point that we've been making here, is that it's been unbelievable that if for no other purpose but to see what the lower echelons of the military, for the lack of a better term, was actually ordered to do and what their culpability actually was in all this. If you remember when Abu Ghraib first broke out, they said it was an isolated incident of just a couple of people that were doing things they shouldn't have been doing. And now we're finding out.
They sure didn't, if I could throw in there, they sure didn't help their case by smiling and giving the thumbs up in the pictures either. So that kind of made it easy to throw them under the bus.
Oh, yeah, I'm not saying that what they did was right. I know. Imagination. I think that the big issue here comes in where they are part of it. We're finding now that it appears, anyway, that this is all part of a coordinated program to prep these guys for Gitmo, and that part of the thing was part of what was going on was they were being prepared for CIA interrogation on the way.
You've really got to wonder. And I wouldn't say that we should not prosecute the people on the low end. I would just like to see also prosecution for who ordered this, who allowed this to occur.
And one of our Twitter folks, Sonny Stokes from South Carolina, is on the line, and they've left the hiding of Twitter, and they've come to us live.
All right.
We'll go to South Carolina. You're on the air.
Yeah, I've tweeted, or whatever the correct verbiage is now, but those characters don't quite allow me to completely give my position on this. But I tweeted earlier about prosecuting everybody involved, even those on the low end. And the female on your show sort of hit on my point, or what I was trying to say was that Nancy Pelosi, if she was aware, and who knows that yet, but if she was, as a Democrat, bleeding liberal, I can say that I don't really care what party you came from, or if you were aware of this and you didn't take steps, you knew that us as Americans were doing something illegal, and you didn't take steps to prevent it, and you did anything that made America look worse. In the eyes of in the global community. I know how I feel personally seeing pictures of John McCain and others being tortured and how it makes me feel against countries that did stuff like that. So I just think if we don't act very aggressively on this, then we're giving ourselves a pass that we don't give other countries.
I actually agree with you 100%. The issue with Nancy Pelosi is very important to remember. Is that as a member of the Gang of Four, she is legally forbidden from being able to go public. And if you remember, in 2002 and 2003, The Democrats didn't have Congress, so she had no power whatsoever to do much other than write a letter and say something. Now, what Nancy Pelosi has said is that she felt – now, I'm not sure, I buy this argument, but I'll lay it out there anyway. She felt that given the fact that she had no power and couldn't do anything, the best thing that she could do to reverse these policies was to win back Congress. As leader of the minority at the time, that's the best thing she could do was get the power back to then do something about it. What I think is important to know is right now, today, Nancy Pelosi can call for hearings if she wants to. And I would encourage her to do so.
And
if she knew, she knew.
That's more my point. She hasn't done that. She got the leadership. So if she knew something, and I still am not convinced that she did, know everything.
Well, she has said she did as of February of 2003. She's acknowledged she knew at that point.
So how long has she had power?
She got in 2006.
I don't think we're being nearly aggressive enough on this. I think this is this is the worst mark on America that I think I've ever seen in my 37 years. And if we're not aggressive about it, then why are we even going over and fighting these wars? You know, they give the excuse that, well, there were no weapons of mass destruction, but look what Saddam Hussein did. He was an evil man. He's this. We appear no different to people in other countries when we condone. I've seen some of these pictures.
Let me ask you, have you contacted your congressman yet?
Every day.
Okay.
I'm a little afraid right now. I warned my husband that I may be arrested soon. I mean, and you know that my congressman and the governors in my state, I'm not going to get very far. But I'm surprised that more Americans aren't outraged on either part. It doesn't matter what party you're sitting in. This makes our troops look bad. It completely diminishes what we're doing over there. Or anywhere else. And if Obama doesn't, I agree with him on not releasing the photos. I think
right.
That's the only bad can come with that.
I agree with you completely. We give up our moral authority when we allow this type
absolutely.
Of thing to happen. And what you said that I really like, I think it puts it very well, is that, you know, imagine how we feel when we see pictures of troops that were mistreated, that were tortured, that have come back from POW camps that, for, you know, whatever reason. And how do we feel against those people? We tend to think of it like, is the whole country condoned it, that did that to our people. Now, when pictures and this type of thing are released and we see that, you've got to wonder, what do people in those countries think of the United States when they see that people in our custody were treated that way? It's pretty sickening.
Yeah, it does seem like – thank you very much, caller. I greatly appreciate your call. For those of you who want to call in, 1-888-228-4494, feel free to call in and really get your voice heard. I think it's important that we do get out there and get a hold of our congressmen and women and let them know how we feel about this, because right now at this point, it does not appear that there's going to be political will in Washington, D.C. to do anything. I think that the end of the day, right now, the way it stands, we've got the Senate investigation going on, and which is kind of, you know, you can hardly hear that going. And the silence coming from Congress is louder than thunder.
Mm.
It truly is.
You wonder if it's are we jaded? Are we distracted? Are we just not involved enough? Because you see this on a lot of issues where you read something, you hear something, and you just think to yourself, I can't believe this is going on. And yet, you know, within certain groups, there's a lot of discussion, but you don't see a whole lot of this being brought to the forefront in public and people, you don't see the level of outrage you would expect. I felt this way when the Iraq War turned out to be a complete, you know, hoax. Where was it just seemed like they were so, it was so easy for them to just cut to, well, he was a bad guy, so it doesn't matter anyways. And that pretty much went through.
Where are we as a nation when we allow this to happen? I mean, you really have to ask ourselves, where has our moral compass gone? When we are able to sit here and act as if this is okay. You know, like I said earlier, and I kind of touched upon this briefly, we as a nation didn't really care in 2002. We wanted none of it. We wanted to blow something up And that's it. And therefore, you know, what do you think about this, Mike? Was our Congress just responding to what the American people wanted at the time, which was revenge, frankly?
Right. I agree that there is an element of that, that they were looking for. You can think of it like this. You wanted action, and I think they were more concerned about action than appropriate action.
Well, also, let's remember something else that happened in the end of 2002, actually the beginning of 2003, which is the exact time period.
Go ahead.
I think Chris is coming back on the air here and rumbling her microphone all over the place.
Yeah, we're getting a little
The exact time period, which was the beginning of 2003, right around the time the war started. Anybody remember the Dixie Chicks?
Oh, yes.
They dared to make one statement against the president and this war, and the right wing came down on them like a ton of bricks. Does anybody imagine, can you imagine for a moment, what would have happened to Nancy Pelosi had she stuck her head over that wall in that environment, in the, you are a terrorist sympathizer, you're unpatriotic, you're anti-American, you are this, you are that. And the general country, especially, unfortunately, the area where our caller was calling from, South Carolina, that the whole Southern Belt, forget it down there, they were just enraged. If you did anything else but march in lockstep, you were targeted for destruction, which is what's, and I don't want to go down this bunny trail too far, but it's amazingly ironic to see the right wing jump into support of the whole Miss California nonsense because of her anti-gay marriage position and saying, oh, it's freedom of speech, freedom of speech, freedom of speech. When back then, if you would have dared say a word, these very same people who are outraged, Mr. Hannity, Mr. Scarborough, outraged that this was going on, would have had your head on a platter. How dare you guys? How dare you?
This is what people mean when they say that they don't like politics, and this is why, unfortunately, a lot of people don't get involved in politics. It's the blatant hypocrisy. It's the, I'll support this day because of my side. It's supporting your side rather than supporting what you truly believe is in the best interest of your country and your people. And unfortunately, the right wing is not alone in crucifying those who disagree with them when it suits their fancy.
No, I'm all for crucifying Miss California, for example, so I have no problem with that. But no, you are 100% right. And maybe as a whole, we need to kind of take a step back and look at this because things do get spun out of whack. I can actually see Nancy Pelosi's position from a bunch of points. She's in an untenable position. She can't come out and say that we are torturing and this is wrong because then she's not supporting the troops. She's hurting America. She's blaming America first. Stop me if any of this stuff doesn't sound familiar. She is unpatriotic, anti-American. These people.
Well, on the subject of Nancy Pelosi, I remember when I first heard this story come out and something rang familiar. She's in a really bad position because I can see both sides on this. You know, on the one hand, as anybody in a leadership position, as a manager, as a an elected official, you do depend on other people's to tell you what they're seeing in the field. You're not all-knowing, and you don't have eyes everywhere. You depend on your people. So on the one hand, if they did tell you something that wasn't true, if they did lie to you, how are you really able to make a good decision? Then on the other hand, doesn't that sound like a cop-out? Oh, they lied to me. I didn't know. It kind of sounds a little familiar, and tell me if you think that there's anything to this. It reminds me of when Hillary was saying that she was lied to, and that's why she initially supported going to war in Iraq, whereas Barack said that he was never in support of this, and then John Edwards said he came out and said he made a mistake. And I think both John Edwards and Hillary took a little bit of a hit there, her for credibility and him for probably bad judgment.
Yeah, I think they did. And it does seem like there was something else that could have been done. as far as this. But like you said, we both said, it's a completely untenable position that these guys were in. We, the people, were not about ready to deal with this nonsense. We threw our support behind George Bush.
You do have to remember what George Bush's approval rating was.
90%.
And you can't really blame the country for standing behind the president after something like that. What you can blame is bad leadership, as reacting in an inappropriate way, just so that there is a reaction.
Well, they viewed the urgency as an opportunity, which most politicians do. In fact, the Democrats had the nerve to actually say this out loud, and they got hit over the head by the Republicans for it.
What's that?
That all crises produce an opportunity. And it's true. It does.
It produces
an opportunity to push their agenda.
But it could have been an opportunity that it could have done us some good instead of throw out how many trillion dollars and how many thousand lives.
This is true.
It reminds me of watching, I'm not sure which, I believe it was on Bill Maher. He had a really good point on this. Somebody was pointing out how things might actually turn out okay in Iraq, and then so that it wasn't a mistake, and he said, wait a minute, regardless of how it turns out, it was a mistake. What about rebuilding all of the infrastructure in the entire United States for that kind of money? What about the 3,000 people who aren't with us anymore?
It would have never happened.
It would never have been. I'm not saying that could have happened, but there are definitely things that we are going to lose out upon because of involving ourselves in that war. You can't blow that kind of capital and say there's no side effect.
Oh, we're in the middle of it right now. I mean, it's a good thing, but it's a bad thing. I mean, I'm getting kind of jumbled up here. We spent so much money, we've lost so much blood, so much treasure in Iraq, that the real war that we need to be fighting, which is in Afghanistan, which is frankly spreading to Pakistan, which we're going to be in Pakistan by the end of the year. I mean, we already are militarily striking in Pakistan. We're going to be in Pakistan. I don't see how we're going to end up avoiding this. And do we then just let up and walk away? Of course we can. We can't let that be a failed state. The Taliban is within 60 miles of the capital now, of Pakistan. And Pakistan is a nuclear country, for crying out loud. So, forget terrorists selling nuclear weapons. These guys are taking over a state that is a nuclear state. So we have to look at all this mess that's going on, and we don't physically have the troops to be able to pull this off. We've got to almost pull back, reconstitute our military, and then go back in again. And that's the big dirty secret nobody wants to talk about, is that if we did pull out of Iraq tomorrow, we'd be back there in 2 to 3 years, max. We'd have no choice because it's going to fall apart again. So now they're trying to just kind of push through and get this done. It looks like things are getting better in Iraq, but it's bleeding over in Afghanistan. So if you look at the entire theater of war, are we winning or losing, or is it a draw right now? I don't know. We might be winning one front, but we're certainly not winning in Afghanistan right now. So it's becoming a real problem. We are going to need other countries to step in and help us if we're going to be able to do this. I don't know what else we've got.
There's another thing we've blown, is the credibility issue.
We have none.
Yes.
Well, Obama's got some credibility, but 888-228-4494, 888-228-4494 is our number. Toll free anywhere in the world, 888-228-4494. And we are talking about the torture issue and what's going on with Nancy Pelosi and the firestorm going on in Washington, D.C. right now. And I mentioned Joe Scarborough earlier. I'm not really one for digging up people's dirty laundry, but Joe Scarborough is attacking Nancy Pelosi and routinely the Democrats on a daily basis. They are trying to say that, basically these guys were un-American, and now it's that they are almost somehow responsible for all this nonsense. And he constantly refers to, my experience in Congress. And I always loved his ads on MSNBC. It said, my experience and knowledge and reputation got me into Congress and kept me in Congress. Of course, he leaves out the part that he resigned Congress in complete disgrace after his secretary was found dead in his office, and he was accused of having affairs with other individuals. I find it interesting that this person has the credibility of the time of day. He could not hold elected office anywhere in this country right now because nobody would elect him because of his past. And yet he's sitting on there shooting off the mouth and beating the living heck out of Nancy Pelosi and others for information that he has no knowledge of. It really drives me bananas. We'll pick this up on the other side of the break. We're going to go on a little bit lighter note here momentarily. 888-228-4494 is the number worldwide. At Jim Alger is the tweet in, call in, make yourself heard. We're going to go to Gotta Laugh with her tweet spot. See you in a few.
Welcome to my tweet spot. Don't get your hopes up. It's me, Gotta Laugh, from the Political Carnival blog, and here I am to recap the week in politics via Twitter.
Hey, Rocky! Watch me pull a rabbit out of my hat!
Gosh darn, I missed! Get ready for a rip-snorting Sarah Palooza! Yes, Sarah Palin was sending tweets galore this week. Everyone pop a Dramamine, fasten your seatbelts, and here we go. Great day! Another frivolous ethics complaint against me was dismissed! I won against another false allegation, too! More info to follow. Great news for Alaska! ExxonMobil began Point Thompson drilling this morning. Commitment to produce good for Alaska and America. Yes, Sarah, nothing says killing the environment like drill, baby, drill. Don't forget to tell little Tripp about your contribution to his future health and that of the entire planet. I'm pleased Interior Secretary Salazar made ESA decision Ray polar bears based on facts, sound science. Yeah, those pesky bears were getting in the way. Killing them off slowly and painfully will solve that little issue in no time flat. Outraged Obama's budget includes it. Wait a minute. Don't you mean outrageous, Sarah? Outraged Obama's budget includes major cuts to missile defense programs when North Korea refuses to abide by UN regulations. I know. Let's start a war instead. Whee! Mother's Day tomorrow, gift advice, write your mom an original poem. I guarantee that's what she wants. And clean the house with a smile. And she added a little smiley face. In other words, don't you know, too, also, moreover, you betcha, and how you know, furthermore, likewise, boy, oh, boy, howdy, oh, say it ain't so, that's real mavericky of ya. Gosh darn it, why the heck not? Tell you what, I'll check and get right back to ya. Jim, you take it now. I've just about OD'd on Palin tweets.
Oh, God, that was great. I gotta love it. That was really cool. She goes after Palin really well on that one.
You know, Palin is supporting your girl now, right? Carrie Fergie.
Oh, God, yeah, she's that's right. She's supporting Carrie for standing up for what she believes in. Carrie. Yeah. Prashan, I guess, is the right pronouncement of her name. I was saying it wrong last week. It goes off, and you know, we can have a conversation here for a few moments about young Miss California, and then we'll get on to the status of the GOP. This whole Miss California nonsense, I think, it sends such a horrible message to our youth that if you go based all on looks, which is the problem with pageants in the first place. You go based all on looks, and then you can get out there and forget about the hateful commentary. She's got dopey opinions. She's entitled to them. But you then lie your ass off over and over again, treating everyone like they're idiots. I'm taking pictures. And it was a windy day, and my top blew up. Now, you know this, Chris. You're the only female among us. That must happen to you all the time. You're out
exactly.
There naked, and your breasts pop out of your shirt all the time, don't they?
Absolutely, every week.
It's amazing.
No.
To me. And we look at this. It's like first there's no pictures of her. Then there's one picture of her. Then there's five pictures of her. Now there's 13 pictures of her. How many places does she show her breasts?
I think actually it reveals a lot about Donald Trump, because this week's story is more about Donald Trump. He had the ability to have her resign her title, and instead, not only did he allow her to keep her title, but he then went on to praise her pictures and said a lot of them.
Okay, Chris, you're
looking at it. It clearly wasn't the pictures that I've seen.
Well, the pictures are good. I don't think it's the issue of the pictures so much as it is the is lying about the pictures and her credibility afterwards. I think that we're a little too quick here to be criticizing, taking this type of pictures or the pageant in and of itself. Or it seems to me that a lot of people are just jumping on the bandwagon of bashing this girl now. They really disagree with her, not because they think that this was really such a horrible thing that she did in taking these pictures.
I think the problem is multiple. Obviously, we're the left, and I guess in this particular instance, I'll fall in this category. We drew the attention by this dumbass comment that she made. But beyond that, it wasn't just making the comment. It was then going out to Washington and becoming a spokesperson for the issue. Once she became aware, let's just assume she got up there and she just crawled out from under a rock and was completely oblivious. Once she became aware this was a big issue, she then injected herself into it deeper, flies to Washington, becomes a spokesperson for this anti-gay marriage group, begins to do commercials in violation of her contract. Then when these pictures start coming out also in violation of her contract, begins to blatantly lie about it. And then there's no problem. Other people have lost their titles for this. So it's one thing after the next. And what I found most interesting to me, and this is as far as I'm going to go on this, what I get most enraged about is that she claimed two things that were completely outrageous. One, that she was that Satan was in the question, that she heard the voice of Satan questioning her when he asked her about the gay marriage issue. And I say when he asked her, implying Perez Hilton is Satan, and that's not what I mean. But when the question was asked, she claimed that she heard Satan in the question. She then claims that she had to give the right answer because of her deep felt belief in Christian moral values. So there was no Satan in the here's your fake breasts. There was no Satan in the show me your breasts for this cameraman and that cameraman and that cameraman. There was no Satan in the I have a choice now to tell the truth or lie. I'm going to instead lie. There was no Satan in any of that. There was no moral compass coming into play for any of that. But on whether or not two people you don't know can get legally married, that is a question for Satan. That type of hypocrisy is utterly outrageous. And I think that's what drew a lot of the ire. I think it was just she made the comment and wouldn't have followed through on it, it would have blown over. And the other thing that she needs to understand, she gets up there and starts crying about my constitutional rights. You have no constitutional rights with the Miss Universe pageant or the Miss USA pageant. Your constitutional rights don't come into play on a private group. That's for government interference. A private group most certainly can censor what you say and do so on a daily basis and can prevent you from saying stupid things. It was a dumb thing to say. It was a divisive thing to say. But if that's what it all was, she'd have gotten away with it. It went further. If you remember this slew of excuses, my understanding is she's going to be a guest host for Fox News. She's going to fit right in there. It started with there's only one picture, then there was two, then there was five, now there's 15. Then it was, it was a windy day. My photos were photoshopped. I was 17 years old. Let me know if any of these sound like the truth. My favorite, and I know that I've got some models out here that listen to the show, so you'll really get a kick out of this one. It was taken in between shots when the wind just blew open and they showed my breasts. In between shots. You can see I'm not looking at the camera. It's in between shots. Give me a break. Give me a break. When do we teach our kids? And here's the nexus, by the way, to the entire thing. When do we teach our kids about accepting responsibility? And this is your nexus right to the entire terrorism and George Bush argument. We see it on all levels these days, whether it's the Miss USA pageant or whether it's torture memos. Nobody wants to take any accountability or any responsibility for anything. And that is the insult. That's what I think the precedent got set by Donald Trump this past week is so terribly wrong. If you want to win in this country, if you want to get ahead, you lie your ass off and just barge forward and don't care who you run over in the process. And I think that's a horrible message to be sending. However, I don't want to get on this long, drawn-out tangent about already more than I already have. About Miss California, I think that it's time to let that just go away. I wish that she would. We want to move forward here and talk about the current status of the GOP, and then we'll go over to some tweets here shortly.
Current status of the GOP, not great.
I would say that they are definitely on life support. At this point,
yeah, they're in the basement,
and this is why they've jumped on board to this terror issue so fast with Pelosi, because if they can get the dust up enough, then they might be able to win back some seats in Congress and move things forward. And when you have Nancy Pelosi, under fire right now, and all this nonsense going on with Michael Steele, who is supporting Michelle Bachmann. This is a tie right. It's the other manufactured story that they're doing, which is Michelle Bachmann is trying to prevent federal funds from going to Acorn. You guys remember Acorn from the election?
No, haven't we visited this before in the past as far as federal funds and what federal funds ought to be spent? I remember the National Endowment of the Arts argument. You know, they find a couple of really horrid examples of what our taxpayer money got spent on, and then they ask the question, and I think it's a fair question to ask whether or not money should be spent in this way or another. What I don't appreciate is when they try to mix this type of partisan politics in with it. Now apparently, Acorn.
Well, Acorn, let's recap
for
this.
For those people who aren't familiar with Acorn, can you just explain a little bit about that?
Yeah, the issue about Acorn was a manufactured issue during the campaign. It started when Acorn's offices were raided by the FBI in Nevada, allegedly for registering a slew of people who were not legally registered, either dead people, Mickey Mouse, various things. And they were accusing – the GOP then seized upon this one action, and they were accusing – Acorn of engaging in voter fraud. Keep something in mind here. While it is illegal to register someone to vote who is not legally allowed to be registered to vote, the crime really, the affront to our democracy really comes in when an individual shows up to actually cast a ballot. So when Mickey Mouse shows up to their precinct to cast a ballot, to cast a ballot, and doesn't have big ears and big feet and looks all dopey, then that is voter fraud. And the GOP, however, understanding the public really doesn't have time to get into the nitty-gritty of all this, tries to scurry it all up. Now,
we've discussed this before, that the shortest argument always wins,
yes,
in the public spotlight. And I don't think people understand where the fraud is coming in here. If I can go off on a side for a second to give a parallel, we've been involved before in signature gathering for a ballot initiative.
Because I might, I was just going to talk about this.
And when you go out and you collect signatures for ballot initiatives to put something on the ballot, you have to go out into the community and get signatures from the public. You have to have the initiative attached. They have to be able to read and know what they're signing. And it's such a large task that there's no way that a few individuals accomplishes that. You have to bring on people, be they volunteers. Often they're people that are paid in order to assist you in collecting the signatures. Now, you can see where the problem comes in when people are paid to collect signatures. If nobody is checking all of these signatures as they come in, people can do forgeries. Excuse me there as that thought derailed.
Well,
have some real life experience with this. I've moved a couple times over the past couple years, and I always switch my voter registration each and every time. And about five, 6 years ago, it came to my attention that not only could I vote where I lived originally when I was 18, but I could vote according to the paper that you have to sign when you go in to vote in four different towns. And the thing is, in my town, because I moved back, you know, after about a decade or so, I presented my voter identification card, and literally both of them were on top of each other in the book, and the lady didn't even catch that, you know, I'm me twice. I joked around with people saying, hey, well, you know, after the Gore election and, you know, the Kerry election, you know, maybe I should go back and vote a couple times to make sure that this time we get it right. And, you know, it's a shame.
Vote early, vote often.
Vote as many times as possible.
The issue here is that the idea that voter fraud was committed by Acorn as the entire group, which is what really the thing they're making is garbage. What Acorn did, Acorn was the victim here. They were defrauded. Me and Mike have both run a campaign signature gathering, voter registration, and so forth.
They finished that fractured thought I had there earlier.
You healed it?
I think I put the pieces back together and can finish that up. So to make a long story short, if I hired people who collected signatures, and some of the signatures they collected for me were not valid, as did occur from time to time, it was then my job to then double check those against the voter rolls. The fraud occurred against me if somebody I hired went out and wrote down signatures that were not legitimate.
Which happened.
Yeah.
We caught plenty of them.
It didn't mean that
you live in California,
to the city as legitimate signatures. I had to check them. And I found out that though these certain percentage were incorrect, they were not legitimate, and that process was done. We verified all the ones that were legitimate, and those were turned in. So the fraud does not occur against the state until the point at which these are turned in as legitimate, which did not happen in our case. We were
apparently, from what I gather from Acorn, they didn't hire you. Mike's specific position on the campaign is talking about. He was hired specifically for that purpose, to do what we call one-to-one verification, which is literally taking, in this case, a signature-gathering campaign to go on a ballot, so you have to have registered voters. So in Mike's case, what he was doing was literally taking every single signature and one-to-one comparing it with the county's official voter registration database to ensure that the two lined up. That is a one-to-one verification. It's a good way. If you're running a campaign like we were running, we had limited time. To get these things, you have to be accurate, very, very tight, to a very, very tight margin. That allowed that to happen. Acorn apparently, in their worst judgment, from what appears, didn't hire Mike. Hey, Acorn, Mike's up for another job, so if you guys want some more help.
Often not done hiring anybody
to verify.
It
often isn't done, because it's cheaper to let the county do it.
And it's a good thing to let the listeners know also that when these things are turned in, when you turn in collected signatures, the government that you turn them into does verify them for you. And, you know, everybody has a certain percentage of them that they cannot verify. I mean, it can be for legitimate reasons, like that person's moved or is not there during this time frame or did not register to vote.
Dead.
Or it could be for, yes, they died, exactly. Or it could be for illegitimate reasons, like, okay, that we can't verify that exists at all. But one thing to note here. Look at how much I'm struggling trying to explain this and how easy it is to say that, he collected signatures don't exist. That's fraud.
Oh, well, here's how I beat
you. That's fraud.
Here's how I beat you. Did you or did you not turn in signatures that were not valid? Yes or no?
Exactly.
You're done.
See, that's
you live in California. Did Mickey Mouse vote for you?
I'm sorry?
I said you live in it for Republican, Mike. You live in California, so did Mickey Mouse vote for you?
No. That is the problem in politics. A simple argument wins. Mike's is fumbling around here, so am I, in trying to explain the detailed intricacies of it. But the bottom line is that Acorn hired people to gather to register voters. They were paid X amount of dollars. Unfortunately, the people who you tend to get that do these things are
they're going job to job.
Yeah, they're high school students, they're college kids.
Engineers aren't going to leave, you know, Boeing to go do this on the weekend.
They might now.
They're financially motivated.
Car dealers that will come out there now.
Might have more people to choose from, unfortunately, at this point in time.
But they're not going to come out there and make $1 or $2 a signature and have to walk door to door or stand in front of a shopping center and get these people. However, when you put a filter in, which is what they should have done, I don't think Acorn really thought. See, in our case, the campaign that you're talking about, it was a campaign that required a very specific number of signatures, at least 10% of the registered voters, but not more than 15%. So it's not to trigger a special election. That gave us a very small window, so we had to shoot right through that window. We made it by 300. We had to shoot right through that window to get this thing on the ballot. So it was very important that you had one-to-one verification in that instance. I don't know for a registered voter if we would have done that or if we would have just gathered them all and dumped them in the city and let them go. However, Acorn was paying per registered voter card. So they are the ones who were defrauded. And this idea that Acorn should become the victim of this is crazy. So let's cut through the spin and go to common sense, shall we? What's really going on here? Well,
right.
If you go to Acorn's website, what does Acorn support? Affordable housing, affordable health care, low-income help for Hurricane Katrina victims. Does any of this sound like a Republican agenda to you? Of course not. That's what this is all about. The Republican Party wants to put the kibosh on the Democratic Party's ability to get more voters registered.
Because they have no alternative. They have nothing to stand on at this point. They knew it before Obama was elected, and, you know, they were kind of grasping for anything at that point. And you're exactly right. You know, Acorn was exploited because there is a relationship, as you both know, having been in office, there's a relationship, and that relationship is that, you know, people seeking elected office, they depend on increasing voter turnout and even, you know, getting people to register to vote. And so you have to some people do depend on those groups that are available, such as Acorn, to get the voter turnout and increase voter registration. And those groups are financially motivated because they want to be hired, yet that's not the purpose of them. So
well, officially,
their motivations are honest, but the Republicans basically they exploit them. That is basically what their tactic is.
You've got to get off this. I'm a Republican business. It's not true.
The Republican Party left part.
I tried to throw in the other side here on the show, but it's we've got to clarify that I'm not a registered Republican.
How sad that they've gone so far off the rails that you have to pull Judas and deny them.
You guys have your fun, but, you know, your own party's got its own dirt to, you know, be exposed.
Hey,
but
we're not talking about that.
Back up.
Type of, you know, jumping to party
defense.
Excuse
me, sir. Sean Hannity's down the hallway to the left.
Jumping to
there?
The party defense does not serve the country.
No, and that's 100% right. You cannot.
And
you
it's this criminalizing of Republicans, and this, you know.
Well, it helps when they are criminals.
Mm.
It sure does. And it feels better after the past 8 years.
No Democrat in Congress has ever been brought up on any charges of any kind of misdoing.
Hey, we don't get for hypocrisy in the airport.
Sign language. Anyone sign language?
Hypocrisy in the airport. It took me a second to put that together.
We don't get in trouble.
Sign language.
Sitting there squawking against molestation while we're tweeting our pages.
Do you want
to lead us in the men's room?
Do you want to stand up for common sense, or do you want to be a cheerleader for the Democratic Party?
Oh, I'm not a cheerleader for the Democratic Party. I can.
I am.
I can do both.
Point.
I was two things and not. I know you are.
Yes.
But the thing is, Mike is 100% right here. It can't be, as Democrats, we can't say that party's always right. They're not. I mean, I know for a shame that absolutely. I should have to voice that.
But that's what separates, that's exactly what separates at this point, anyway. That's what separates the Democratic Party from the Republican Party. The Democratic, or the Democrats, I should say, themselves are saying, hey, let's find out the truth, let's, you know, get this right. Whereas almost everything that you hear and see from the Republican side is a denial. You know, they just, no matter what the facts are, they deny it or they ignore it or it didn't happen. And so, you know, someone has to figure that out. And it's, well, it's not necessarily easy to navigate on, you know, by the news and our newspapers that are apparently going bankrupt left and right.
Well, the getting back to what we're talking about here, which is the derailing of the GOP's train
and
ever smaller train.
Acorn.
Ever smaller train. I matter of fact, I think they're just a caboose right now. Chuck Todd.
Train wreck, actually.
Chuck Todd wrote an op-ed piece, and I'm not going to read the entire thing, but Chuck Todd with MSNBC wrote an op-ed piece that was published, and it says, yes, it's that bad for the GOP. There are a number of ugly debates going on inside the Republican Party right now. There's a debate over whether or not there is even something wrong. There's a debate over whether or not the RNC chair Michael Steele should be trusted with making financial decisions for the party. There's a debate over whether or not the party should come up with an alternative to being just a party for conservatives. And there's a debate over whether or not at all, whether or not all of this is just an overreaction. And that is what is sad right now for junkies. Things don't even look that competitive anymore. This is a point
that's because Michael Steele gets on TV and he's speaking in language that's not even in English. It's the heezy, beezy, bejeezy, you know. Even Obama pointed it out last
weekend. What was that? I mean, this whole, you know, when Michelle Bachmann pulled this whole talking, I don't know, was that gangsta? Whatever the heck that was, talking in a manner in which no white person should ever speak. I mean, you make a fool out of yourself when you do this stuff.
Michelle Bachmann is not necessarily human.
His house and other goofy things. And what are you thinking? Do you think that does she really believe that this is going to somehow make African Americans go, "Oh wow, she's one of us. Let's jump on that"? I mean, are they really that stupid? Do they think this makes them hipper? I mean, I don't. To me, it's degrading to African Americans to sit there and try to do this. It's a vernacular,
absolutely,
a street vernacular at that. That they've developed, that's their thing. Let them have it. I mean, what are we doing here? You know, trying to.
A lot of these phrases. I mean, I'm not going to say that she's not embarrassing herself, but a lot of these type of phrases are different vernaculars from different communities. You know, be it something from rap or be it something from the skater or gaming community or whatnot. When people try to pick this up that aren't really part of that community and repeat it, it's like when the dad tries to talk to the kids and embarrasses himself because he doesn't even really know what the statements mean.
The worst part is she's so stupid she's not embarrassed about it.
She doesn't. Yeah, she's completely in oblivion. She lives in a world in and of itself, and I think apparently she occasionally visits Congress.
I got a tweet here that I'm going to throw in because I think it's a little bit it kind of fits what we were just talking about. And this is from Natalie Walker 84 on Twitter. She says politicians need to quit caring about party loyalty and start caring about the people they govern in the UK and the US. And she's listening to us right now in England.
Fantastic.
So hello to the UK. It's pretty late out there. It's 1:17 in the morning in the UK, so we've got some dedicated fans out there.
Jim, actually, her point is very valid, and it actually goes back to what you were saying about Joe Scarborough. I happen to watch Joe Scarborough fairly well, almost on a daily basis, and today and yesterday, I know.
Well, today was just pathetic to watch. It was
today
painful.
And yesterday, most the show was about loyalty. This one lady whose name escapes me right now, but she's on MSNBC.
The fact that he has them to the flag, right?
And CNBC. No, she was saying that someone is the real Morning Joe. And Joe Scarborough had a fit about it and made, yesterday's show and today's show about how you have to be loyal to the show and you have to be loyal.
Krista,
to, and he was literally physically
loyal to the show.
Yes, loyal to the show, and to he denounced her. He was turning his back to her physically on camera, and it was made, you know, as a joke, but it does bring home the point. That
Scarborough,
you know, he's Republican, and no, he's not. He's not completely a joke. He has valid points. It's just that sometimes he's a little too Republican, and I want to strangle him.
I don't think for physical violence towards Mr. Scarborough. I think that I do wonder why MSNBC has him. I guess he's their token Republican. He used to be a lot more moderate. When did he run to the right like this and just get stupid? I mean, you know, to go back
to a point
that Natalie made earlier on Twitter, which is I'm sorry, Natalie sends me a tweet that says, "I'm in Wales at the minute, Jim. Don't let the Welsh hear you say that." Apparently, by saying that she was in England and she's in Wales. I'm sorry.
Our mistake.
They are very touchy about that out there.
Got to get that right.
Yes, it's like accusing someone from New York of being from Texas. It doesn't go over so well in Yankee territory. But actually, it's probably worse. Probably like accusing someone from New York from being from Boston. That's probably
there you
more,
go.
More like.
There you go.
I think that the issue with Scarborough is that he seems to have taken it upon himself to run to the right on some really dopey issues. He still, on a token basis, opposes his party. But when you sit there, and as Natalie was saying earlier on Twitter, if you sit there and you know, have a debate over whether or not you're going to accept torture, well, the debate Joe starts with is, well, it's not really torture. Well, him and about five other idiots are saying that.
Oh, no, it's not torture. It's just throwing a little water and putting hands up in the air. What did he say? It was ridiculous.
Splashing water. Splashing a little water.
Splashing a little water.
Oh,
yeah.
And
a little sleep deprivation. That's nothing.
I like what Jesse Ventura said on Larry King Live the other day. He said, give me a waterboard Dick Cheney in an hour, and I'll have him confessing to, I don't know what it was, but let's just insert
the Sharon Tate murders.
Sharon Tate murder, yeah. He said, I'm confessing the Sharon Tate murders. You know, and he's right, because the Republicans will sit here, you know, we're kind of coming right back to the torture issue again, but it all does come into one, because when the GOP has lost its compass so bad that they are out there supporting torture, opposing any kind of rebuilding of the United States, and now let's talk about this for a few minutes, shall we? Let's talk about the next thing that just gets under my skin. The Republican Party met last week, and they're serious. I swear, I believe this meeting happened in a schoolyard, somewhere under the swings, because they actually passed a resolution to rebrand the Democratic Party. Now, as everyone knows who's been listening to the show, Newt Gingrich returned from the play yard a couple of years ago and decided to rebrand the Democratic Party the Democrat Party, because he thought that they could paint Democrats as being elitist, so they will not say the word Democratic. They will call it the Democrat Party, which, you know, I say that anytime someone gets on the air, as you guys witnessed on our first show, and we had a Republican person here who referred to the Democratic Party as the Democrat Party, I jumped them. I think that we should throw them straight off the air when they pull this nonsense. They've now said this has worked so well for them. They're now going to rebrand the Democratic Party. You'll love this. Try to refrain yourself. Hold on, folks. As the Democrat Socialist Party.
Oh, Jesus.
Awesome.
These idiots. Did they get out of third grade? I mean,
well, they're a desperate party, and desperate, you know, times call for desperate measures, and sometimes desperate measures are just absolute moronic thoughts that happen to come out of their mouth before it has crossed between one ear to the other and passed through the brain.
Well, you know, it's like bad advertising, and we've all heard that bad advertising jingle, or we've seen that advertisement that just makes us cringe because it's so stupid. But does it work? And what does that say if it does work, I think, is the larger issue here.
I don't think it works. And I'll tell you what. Well, now I don't think it works. Not this environment. I think the whole idea of trying to brand the Democratic Party as socialist didn't work so well in the last election. First of all, let's start here. And here we go. We can tick off all of our Republican friends. Breaking news. Jim Alger says, and I quote, "Not all socialism is bad, folks. Not all socialism is bad."
That's because we do have some aspects of socialism. Program.
Medicare, Medicaid is a socialist program.
Education.
School lunches is a socialist program. Well, yeah, education is a socialist program. Now, if you listen to Ron Paul this morning, he would like to throw out the Department of Education. He would like to throw out the Interior.
Anything that's not constitutionally guaranteed is what he would like to throw out.
Yeah,
anything
I'd like to throw
that
there's no constitutional guarantee to immigration, but we can spend the next 2.5 hours talking about that. So I think that there is this whole side of the Republican Party that wants to really slim down government. Now, Ron Paul, love him or hate him, at least he actually says what he thinks. He thinks what he says, and he believes it, and he really has something he wants to fight for. Yeah, he's
definitely
a straight shooter. You can agree to disagree with him.
This is true. I mean, he's got a couple of things that I just can't see how he can actually buy that. But when you listen to the man speak, he does support his topics, and he is a straight shooter.
He did predict the
I would say that on the topic of socialism, that you know it's not. You can look at a number of different governments, you know, call them communist, call them whatever.
Hey, I just got called a commie.
did you?
Yeah,
I mean,
through Finstan, I'm pretty sure they're kidding. They're just kidding. So no flaming them. Sends me a thing that calls me a commie.
Commie?
Commie and proud, damn it.
Oh, you lord.
888
Oh, my.
Or quit calling a commie on Twitter and call me a commie to my face, or at least to my ears. 888-228-4494 anywhere in the world. Continue this conversation.
Good point. But to say that roads are socialist and schools are socialist, well, other forms of government build roads and have schools as well. I think when you really use the term socialist.
I didn't say roads. I said schools. I said Medicare, Medicaid.
That doesn't change the point. I mean, other governments.
When you say you, I'd like to know what you're referring to here.
Okay, maybe perhaps I misspoke. So let me rephrase that. When you look at these services and you say the government provided these services, so therefore socialism isn't bad. I think when people refer to socialism, they're talking about European socialism, such as you see in Finland or whatnot.
No, they're not.
From the libertarian standpoint, when you say Ron Paul, and he doesn't believe in anything, but as far as you know, government involvement. But I don't think most people believe that the government should stop funding roads or the fire department, but I do think that people get leery when the government starts to get more and more involved.
The way our economy's going, they might.
Here's where I think the Republican Party left itself. I agree with some of the principles, dare I say this on the show, of the Republican Party, in that government
needs to be
financially responsible.
Oh,
government
my.
Needs to have financial spending constraints. However, when
How dare you say our government should be Wait, no. No, you're right. They actually should be financially responsible.
When you look at the past 8 years, how can you say that supports the Republican Party platform? Reduction in government, the size of government, control of spending. They've completely left that.
It is a joke. It is a national joke. Here's the problem. This strategy by Fox News, and they've used it for the last 8 years. It's repeat often. Forget what the facts are. Forget if you're lying through your teeth to repeat it in the first place. But just say it often enough, and people will eventually believe you. It's been done before. They don't have any conceptual idea of what rebranding means. They just want to insult the Democratic Party and Democrats in general in the hopes that the Democratic voters or anyone who's moderate or center Republicans that have sort of left the party because the party left them, will come back. And they are desperate. So they do things like say, oh, the Democrats are socialists, and as if, you know, people are supposed to assume the worst and, oh, my gosh, go fleeing back to the Republican Party. It's a bunch of BS, and, you know, they need to be called on it, point blank. They need to be called on it. We do have some aspects of socialism in our society, and as Jim was saying, education, Medicare, social security, no one in their right mind in Congress would ever vote to take that away. They wouldn't. It would be political suicide. So for Fox and the Republican Party to brand the Democratic Party as socialist, what's that?
I said, including the members of the Congress that are cashing their own Social Security checks.
Exactly. So for the Republican Party or anyone representing them, you know, the talking heads on Fox News, whose only job is to lie and lie often and lie through their teeth, it's just ridiculous. It's absolutely utter BS, and they need to be called on it and say, listen, you know what, that whole name-calling BS, it's so not true, and if you want to call us that, then find out the facts before you go and open up your mouth. Because people
never let the facts get in the way of a good political hit.
No. You can't.
As a political strategist, I can tell you, because I've been guilty of this myself, I'm ashamed to say. You never let the facts get in the way of a good political hit.
But
I don't know.
I have some bad news out there for
anybody who really thinks it, you know, really believes in socialism. It ain't going to happen. There's no money for any socialism.
There's no money.
They just don't have anything. They have nothing against Obama. So they are desperate, and that's what they have resorted to. As you said, Jim, to, you know, the strategy of the mentality of a kindergartner. You know, get out of the schoolyard.
Isn't this such a disservice to the country?
Well, however, I think, again, we're getting into the political party banter and away from some of the actual issues we're facing here. It is legitimate to question, you know, what's going on financially with this country right now. And is it a good idea to be getting into this much debt? And what kind of government services should we be paying for, looking at millions and billions of dollars of shortfall? I mean, in my own state, California, we are facing just disaster. We're looking at $22 billion shortfall. We have a bunch of measures on the ballot right now which don't look like they're going to pass that could reduce that to $15 billion. The state's looking at liquidating properties that will bring in a whopping $1 billion. And, you know, then what do we do about the rest? When you're talking about this type of shortfall and reaching the end of the rope of borrowing money, you really do have to ask yourself which of these services – can we afford, and are we going to cut, and what can we afford and not afford to be able to do any longer?
Well, I think that this is kind of the big problem that we have as a nation right now, is that we are really going bankrupt. And if some of the predictions...
But we knew that before. We knew that before. Bush knew that. He chose not to do anything. In fact, he chose to leave out of his budget the whole entire Iraq war, as if, you know, out of sight, out of mind is going to help anything. And so now it's just compounding.
That's politically worked for him to do so.
I agree with you. And yet, you know, going back to my state, California legislature, solidly Democratic. Solidly. That's never been threatened. And yet, you know, look at the position we're in. I mean,
responsibility. In California, your biggest problem is the people, not the politicians.
They're
part of it.
You know, getting us into this bind. I mean, our state, and I'm sure you see this mirrored in other states and on the federal level, our state's idea of fixing the budget is, hey, we borrowed enough money to cover it. We're good. And I think if I ran – not that you can always compare personal finances to state finances, but if I tried to run my show like that, hey, I fixed my budget problems. Oh, great. Mike, what'd you do? I borrowed 4 or 5 times what I'm worth, and
well,
I'm going to do it again next year.
Which is why we're in the mess we're in now.
You really got to look at, you know – tremendous amount of irresponsibility to go around here.
Well, this is really we kind of come full circle, but you provide a really good transition point here, is that the real problem in California is, you know, you want to talk about, let me back up just a hair here. Many people believe we live in a democracy. We really don't live in a democracy. We live in a republic, which is a representative government, as opposed to a one-man, one-vote government on every issue. However, there are some states in this country that do actually have a true one-to-one ratio on legislation, a one-man, one-vote on legislation. California is one of them through their ballot initiative process. And the problem with what voters do, and they love to do this, is they want to get this, get that, get this, and they never find a way to fund it. They do the exact same thing that the legislature does. So we're kind of all in this boat together. Nobody wants to talk about this. Nobody wants to talk about, you know, why are we in the housing crisis? Oh, the bad evil banks did this and the Congress did that. What about the schmuck that went in there and got $1 million loan on his $250,000 house, knew damn well he couldn't afford it. He wasn't, was he going to get some job making $2 billion a year that he didn't have the time? I mean, when we sit here and act as if no one is responsible for this, but these big, mean, evil corporations or big, mean, evil banks. Don't get me wrong. The banks are a bunch of jerks, and they've done some pretty screwy stuff, and they're still continuing to do it. However, to act as if, right back to terrorism, right back to Miss California, no responsibility at all is being taken by anybody. The country
because
is
everybody
hell in a handbasket.
We got
and
point,
doesn't have even the money to buy the flippin' handbasket.
Point the finger syndrome.
Nobody
wants to make tough choices. That's the part that you're getting at. Nobody wants to sit down and, you know, look at the numbers and say, okay, realistically, we have to cut stuff because you know why? If we do, then the politicians who say that, they understand it's an elected position, and if you go and sit there and say, hey, constituents, I know you like education and all, but we got to cut your budget, it goes back to Joe Biden's argument about, you know, the everything happens at the kitchen table. Well, if it affects me, of course I'm going to work against it, or next time that you're up for office, I'm going to vote your butt out of there. And you're exactly right. If nobody wants to take the responsibility to say, okay, listen, we're in hard times, and we have to do something because doing nothing is only making it worse for us.
On Twitter, Future Directed asks, does anyone ever ask why is there no money? I'm not sure we have to ask. We can kind of see where it's going. The budget's pretty transparent. The amount of
why
money
is there no money? We had money.
We had money.
We had money.
If you listen to the GOP, the surplus never existed. It was all a manufactured in the heads of set up George Bush.
Except that on paper, I understand this argument. On paper, we had a surplus under Clinton. But on paper and in reality and every other aspect that you examine it, we are totally in the red for,
$600 billion more now?
That's a Bush.
You can't increase spending and cut taxes and think there's not going to be a negative problem. This is like increasing spending and taking half your time off work.
I mean, back to the Twitter comment, one does have to question why such a shortfall. It seems, at least from the bottom rung
here,
why
is there a shortfall?
On Main Street paying your taxes, that taxes in one form or another and the cost of things have done nothing but go up. You know, when I look at, you know, the amount of property tax that's being collected, you know, based on the inflated property values. Yes, they've fallen. They're still higher than they've been historically. When I look at what I pay to register my automobile, when I look at what I pay on sin taxes, sales tax, this has all gone up, and yet we're always in the red. One does have to kind of ask, where is all this money going? Why is it so hard to do the budget here?
It's going to the war in Iraq, or at least that's where it was going, because it was left out of our budget. Most people didn't even know. Most people are completely unaware that budget that they were seeing for the past 8 years, Karl Rove thought it was a brilliant idea for George Bush to kind of leave that out, you know, just omit it from there, and out of sight, out of mind, abracadabra, it never happened. And then, oops,
Obama
gets
into office.
That
was a horrible budget that, you know, so many holes in that budget. It's true on a federal level. But then if you look on a state level, California's been borrowing money since, I believe it's 2001 or 2002, and we've kicked that can every single year. At the end of every single year, we don't have enough money, and we borrow more money, so we kick that can, and I think the can hit the wall finally.
Well, I mean, you guys are going through a real hard time out there. And one of my favorite things is the city of Los Angeles. They are talking about cutting jobs. Well, they're talking about cutting jobs at the entire state of California.
Oh, we're looking at tremendous amount of job cuts right now. What they're doing is they're furloughing people. What they're doing is they're sending them home temporarily without pay, just so that the state can make the ends meet temporarily. Long term, we're not going to be able to afford this workforce that we have now unless we increase taxes. It's just not possible.
Well, what's interesting to me is in the city of Los Angeles, they are talking about cutting the workforce, it was 10%. and they're trying to cut across the board 10% seems to be the magic number. Everybody's taking cuts 10%. They want to cut the pay 10%. They want to cut the workforce 10%. Guess what's not being cut 10%? The income of the city council and the mayor. These guys are the highest paid city council in the country, making $170,000 per year and a car. And full-time staff, and the staff, some of their staff has cars, and all this nonsense. The city is going belly up, so fast they can't even see straight. But they don't want to take a pay cut.
So they don't want to share in the pain.
No, they don't want to share in the pain. Instead, they vote themselves in. They put themselves in so they can stay in office longer, collect lifetime pensions, and all of the nonsense, all on the dime. That's just one example in Los Angeles, but statewide in California, they're going. It's not just California. I mean, even
it's
in D.C. trouble. So
it's
all throughout the entire country.
What about the whole auto industry? Who are set to lay off people, but give people a break for a couple weeks during the summer so that they don't have so that they didn't have to go into the red. They're sacrificing their workers, or the workers are willing to be sacrificed in their pocketbook temporarily.
Well, we're going to get onto the whole worker thing with GM and everything else when we come back from the next break.
Now, speaking of disasters,
speaking of disasters,
back to the
you're not.
Oh, it's
well, I mean,
amazing what's going on in the automobile industry.
It is.
Kay Cincy on Twitter. Says, how about corporations that aren't paying any taxes or are hiding profits to not pay taxes on that money? This is one of the things that President Obama is working on right now, to close some offshore tax loopholes. So I heard one. There's one particular building in the Cayman Islands that houses like 18,000 corporations. It's the largest building known to man.
Is it like an office building with all of these?
And it's crazy because you're talking about including big banks. I mean, you're talking about Citibank, Bank of America, banks that have taken bailout money are using little side corporations to avoid paying taxes. Now, I'd be curious to kind of get into the depth of all that and find exactly what is true and what's just spin and rhetoric. Admittedly, I don't have all the information on that. But, you know, when companies like Halliburton, who've made billions of dollars, move their headquarters out of the United States, they don't have to pay taxes while they still have government contracts, is beyond fathomable.
One could say that's not patriotic.
I'm not one. I'm saying that's not patriotic. Joe Biden got nailed by the GOP during the presidential campaign when he said that paying taxes is patriotic. What? It's not? Is it not patriotic to pay your fair share for the country? I mean, you know, I find it really amazing that we get into this.
Well, almost every large corporation has made a subsidiary tax shelter corporation, well, smaller corporation, dummy corporation, you could say, for the purposes of putting them their primary location at this building as a tax shelter, just so that they can get out of it, because I think that the number is definitely into the tens of billions, if not trillions, that we're missing out on in tax revenues.
It's a lot. I don't know how big of a dent it would make, but I know that it is a lot, and we should be doing something about that. And you know, but yeah, right now, you know, Barack is trying to do banking reform to kind of get these credit card companies in line. And the banking lobby is really pushing very hard to try and prevent these reforms from taking place. The GOP spin on this is that it's going to affect people who need credit the most. Well, here's the problem. It's not about whether or not you need credit the most. The people who need credit the most are people who are filing bankruptcy. They may not necessarily be the right people to be given credit to. The people who are not responsible with credit are the exact people who you shouldn't be allowing to dig themselves into a deeper hole. So it seems to me that we should be looking into this. We're gonna lighten up the mood here just a hair. 1-888-228-4494. 888-228-4494 is our number anywhere in the world. You guys need to get off Twitter and get onto the phone. I should stop reading the Twitter stuff and force these guys to pick up the telephone. 888-228-4494. Actually, we are, because we're getting like one out of every 20 or 30 tweets or we're putting on the air. You guys could get on the air yourself if you just pick up the telephone. 888-228-4494 is our number. We're going to go.
Don't be shy. If we can do it, you can do it.
Exactly. We'll go hang out with Gotta Laugh with her tweet spot.
Welcome to my tweet spot. Don't get your hopes up. It's me, Gotta Laugh, from the Political Carnival blog, and here I am to recap the week in politics via Twitter. It's time for a few random tweets. Marcos Moulitsas from the Daily Coast tweets, Republicans love America so much, over a third would consider secession. Now, with apologies to Meghan McCain, allow me to do my best Laura Ingraham impression of Meghan McCain. My mom is super mellow and chill. She has the best sense of humor of anyone I know. She'd have to. The very clever Cogro X, also from Daily Coast, tweets, pardon me, Mr. Hannity, would you happen to have any Grey Poupon eyeliner? Cogro X on EFCA. If signing my name is good enough for me to sign up to serve in Iraq, it should be good enough for me to join a union. The incomparable Glenn Greenwald on Nancy Pelosi being informed, or not, of torture. Telling Nancy Pelosi that you're breaking the law doesn't mean that you're allowed to do it. And, of course, that should also be investigated. Cogro X responded, especially if you're also lying to Pelosi about the illegality and forbidding her from getting a second opinion. Now, here's one from a hardcore Republican. It's amazing to me how I tell libs things they don't know, and they turn conservative. Anyone else seen that? I hadn't. The reply from I voted no on Prop 8, it's like claiming gays can be cured of gayness. From fake McCain advisor Marty Eisenstadt, I hear that my old pal Joe the Plumber is in hot water with the gays. From what I hear, though, that's exactly where they'd want him. Greg Mitchell, Bill Maher on why Joe the Plumber quit the GOP this week. He realized the party was taking advice from morons, i.e. him. And finally, my old pal Shock tweeted, the GOP believes in faith-based health care. Ask God for help meeting your premium, then pray like hell you'll never get sick. That's it for random tweets. Take it away, Jim.
Well, thank you very much. And that was, she does lighten up the mood a bit. 888-228-4494 is our phone number. Just a quick note here for our listeners in the Midwest from just north of Dallas, Texas, almost all the way up to the Ohio line. There's a big squall of thunderstorms going through there that can produce tornado activity. We suggest that if you're in that area, you keep a regular radio handy if you're not listening to us on the air. Keep a regular radio handy and be prepared for the emergency broadcast system in the event that you have to evacuate and seek shelter. We want all of our listeners to be safe and as enthralling as our broadcast here may be. I would much rather you were safe than have you guys listen in here. So be very careful. That's going to include Oklahoma, looks like Kentucky, Indiana, Illinois, and parts of northeastern Texas. Almost the entire state of Oklahoma is affected right now. So you guys be safe. This is moving eastbound. It's going to be approaching the Memphis, Tennessee area here shortly. So keep an eye out. Tune into your local weather and keep be wary about that and make sure that you're not in the danger zone. With that, we're going to come back to our regular broadcasting, which is we were going to talk about the auto bailout and the auto situation, which just went from bad, I would say, definitely to worse. It's not quite Armageddon, but you can see it.
Well,
there.
It's for these automakers, it's Armageddon.
It's bad times.
Who would have ever have thought a few years ago that we would be facing this situation we are now, that they would be in this type of hot water? I think this is, if you really back up and look at it, I think what we're looking at here is really over-consumerism to begin with, and then such an incredible pullback that nobody could adjust to it. We're not talking about an increase of spending and then a slowly backing back down. We're talking about mortgage your house and buy cars versus nobody buy anything for a while. And correct me if I'm wrong here, but I believe that the automobile industry reported selling half as many cars this year as the previous year.
That was down 50%. And, you know, we talked about this on, I believe we talked about it on the first show. If not, we've definitely talked about the blog about how during the fall, in the run-up to all of this, Congress was talking about how bad American cars were and in their hearings, and this is all because GM had crappy cars. And then what inevitably happened was people stopped buying cars. So it's becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy, is that the automobile manufacturers that were already being hard hit were basically thrown under the bus the rest of the way by congressmen who were grandstanding and saying, this is all your fault, this is all bad, American car industries are bad. It's not just the American car industry, it's the entire car industry worldwide. Other governments around the world are bailing out their car industry.
I'd make two separate issues here. I think that the American car industry is suffering from decisions it's made in the past. I think that's undeniable. And they do have a trust issue with consumers that dates back to the 1970s. But to say that this entire thing is caused by their actions, obviously
not. No, of course not.
The automobile sales fallout is
the credit market is also
by the recession.
The credit market dried up too. No one's really lending to people, and if they are lending, people are right now having to choose whether to, you know, pay their mortgage, which you know the whole mortgage fiasco, or buy a new car. And well, having the old one, even though it might maybe a clunker or might need a lot of work on it, is better than going homeless.
Well, but people's net worth has seen a dramatic drop. I mean, when you think that the average American, most of their equity, well, they have their job and then they have their home. Their car might be worth a little bit as well, but people were using their home pretty much as their ATM. The value of the home was going up every year. You know, the home was worth more and more money. You could pull a second loan out of the home. Now we have multiple problems, though. The home just lost a significant portion of its value. The banks have tightened up. They're not as willing to lend. And you don't look as good to the bank as someone to lend to, having lost so much of your value. I mean, it really you got to ask yourself, when are we going to get to the bottom of this spiral? Go ahead.
They're all interrelated, because the home lost its value because of the fact that everyone is selling their homes and not enough people are buying their homes. And why are they all losing their homes and not buying homes? Because of the mortgage and the inflation that they had with that. So now, you know, that ends up kind of snowballing into the auto industry.
It's amazing. It's like people will never learn. People are always willing to jump on the bandwagon of a market going crazy. And we saw this with the NASDAQ, and now we just saw it with the home value. You know, to think that homes, that it was reasonable, that it was sustainable for homes to be, you know, increasing at 30% a year is ridiculous. I mean, you look at this on a curve, and you can see the curve go nearly vertical. You can tell that this is a bubble. And yet we were busy denying that this was a housing bubble, and we were busy saying that other factors are coming into play. And now we're seeing a whole number of things coming unglued. The auto industry, particularly in trouble here, because the newer automobiles are more reliable. You can choose to drive your automobile for a few more years if you want to. Like you said, the banks are not as willing to lend money, and they can't lend money to as many people any longer. But just looking at this from a business standpoint, I can't even imagine having to adjust what they're having to adjust to. I don't think the average person really understands what goes into forecasting and operating a factory, the amount of supplies that you have to schedule, your outlook, the amount of people that you have to schedule. When you see the amount of units that are ordered from your company going from 18 million to 9 million, how do you adjust to that?
Absolutely. And those little companies that they're ordering from, if their purchase orders are drying up, then they can't afford to, you know, pay their payroll, and so people are losing their jobs, and that then goes, you know, recycles back into the whole mess of why the auto industry is tanking. And it is a real shame, because, as you said, you know, we American automakers have made a lot of technological progress, and our cars are more reliable. However, the caveat to that is is that, actually, I wasn't going to go on the caveat of that. I was going to make some parallelism, and I think I'm going to make it anyway, so let me go with this. It's unfair for the auto industry to have the situation that they're in, and yet for the banking industry to, you know, say, oh, my goodness, we're going to go bankrupt, and all of a sudden get this huge multi-billion-dollar bailout. The two are not at all even, and it's almost an insult. It is an insult to the fact that blue-collar workers are treated much differently than white-collar workers. And the blue-collar workers are who you depend on to buy those cars.
Chris, hold on one second, please. We're getting requests here for this information, so I'm going to go ahead and broadcast it out. The National Weather Service has issued a tornado watch for the following counties in the state of Oklahoma: Alfalfa, Beckham, Blaine, Custer, Dewey, Ellis, Garfield, Grant, Harper, Kay, Kingfisher, Major, Noble, Roger Mills, Woods, and Woodward. If you are in those areas, we recommend that you tune out of this station and get onto your local airwaves so you can get your information as you need it. Once again, the National Weather Service issued a tornado warning for Alfalfa, Beckham, Blaine, Custer, Dewey, Ellis, Garfield, Grant, Harper, Kay, Kingfisher, Major, Noble, Roger Mills, Woods, and Woodward, Oklahoma. Okay, let's go back to our regular scheduled broadcasting.
Back to the automakers. Well, what I was about to say is that, you know, wouldn't you agree that both the automakers and the banking industry have received just billions of dollars in an attempt to shore them up and an attempt to keep to break this spiral? What concerns me as far as late breaking news is that it's continuing to look grim. The outlook is continuing to be poor for the automotive industry. We're not really seeing that turnaround. Now we've gone from, well, we're going to save them to, well, Chrysler's going to have to go bankrupt anyway. That's inevitable, to where now we're looking at a GM bankruptcy. And I just want to make sure that people understand what that means when these companies go bankrupt. When this company goes bankrupt, it's going to get out of paying a significant percentage of its creditors, of its pensions, of people that depend on General Motors for their health insurance. And that is going to, in and of itself, ripple through the economy. This happened when Delta Airlines went bankrupt. They quit paying pensions, which people were counting on. They figured, hey, I worked for this company 20 years. I've earned the pension. It's a sure thing. I'm retired. I get my pension. Then all of a sudden, oh, the company's that paying that went bankrupt, and now you're getting a percentage of it or you're not getting it anymore, which means you have less money to spend, which means more money is going to be pulled out of the economy. If we keep taking money away from people at the low level, they're not going to have the money to spend on the goods to keep the economy cranking, and the cycle continues.
I agree, and that's why it's so infuriating to...
You have 2 minutes left on this call.
...and say, oh, we need this and get it, and for the automakers to say, we need this, and for Congress to then say, oh, well, if you need it, then show us your plans, your restructuring plans. Show us how you're going to, you know, do this and do that to self-correct your own market, which is all well and good, except that it's a complete double standard. And on top of that, you don't see the banking industry, for the most part, having them to say, okay, workers, well, you have to cut your time, you have to cut your pay. That was the automakers who had to go and make those kind of choices. And they were the ones who were given the ultimatum. Okay, well, go find somebody who can back you up, i.e. Fiat. And it's not fair, because our economy is dependent on the little guy, the middle class, not people who make millions of dollars every year.
I agree 100%. I think that this is going to be a big effect on the economy. It's going to be a really big problem.
Something we should say, though, is that people have lost a tremendous amount of money in banking, and there's a lot of banking management that's been completely wiped out by this. And again, I think that you really can't point to any one group that's responsible for this. There's so many factors came into making this possible. Are the automakers completely innocent victims of this? Of course not. They, you know, they built vehicles that were, one could call irresponsible, that, that met temporary market needs that people knew were not good long-term shots. Detroit has, you know, lost the trust of so many people, over quality issues, regarding their vehicles. And it's all coming home to roost. Then we have the banking industry, the lack of regulation in the banking industry. We have banks acting as insurance companies, but not having to have the types of money set aside that insurers do. As far as the economy, I think it is above and beyond the most serious issue that we're facing right now. And there are still it's good to see that it's being dealt with and that these things are coming out. But it looks like the pain is far from over, and then we're still going to have to face a lot of the wrath of decisions that have been made over the past few decades. A lot of this goes back.
Oh yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. It's it seems like you know, we're going to have to do something here with about this. It's going to get worse before it gets better.
You know, I wish it was as simple as the people who support the free market idea hold it out as. That, okay, this company is doing lousy. They've the poor management job. They took risks they shouldn't have taken and let them fold. But when you have entire industries getting involved in that, the entire banking industry, the entire automotive industry, you obviously can't just let them fail. We're already going to get hurt bad enough by letting them go bankrupt and trying to keep them operating. So then you get into the situation we're in now where you have, you know, the government buttressing these companies, trying to keep them afloat. We're in somewhat uncharted territory. I know we've had recessions before. We've been in the Depression. But nobody can say definitively what's going to work and to what extent it's going to work. So it's kind of scary times in that regard.
Yeah. And as you're saying, the people need to understand that this is really going to affect Main Street.
It already has. In recent news that they're talking about the dealerships that are being shuttered. And then, you know, again, the cascading effect of this. We have some major dealerships in my area that nobody thought they would be on the cut list, and they are. So then those communities are going to be out the tax revenue that those dealerships used to bring in. Those people are now going to be added to the rolls of the unemployed. When you have a dealership close, it's not such a big deal. The salesman can go on to the next larger dealership. They can go into another area. When you're talking about mass closing of dealerships, all of these salesmen are not going to be able to find a job selling cars anymore. So we're going to have more of a problem of retraining workforce, of the unemployed, of more tax revenue issues. It's all hitting at – it's almost too much at once.
It is, and quick break here. Once again, this is ongoing breaking news as it happens. The National Weather Service has issued additional tornado watches. These are for the state of Missouri, Franklin, Jefferson, St. Charles, St. Louis, and St. Louis City, Missouri. Franklin, Jefferson, St. Charles, St. Louis, and St. Louis City, Missouri. These are tornado watches, once again, if you're in this area. We ask, as much as I don't like telling our listeners to tune out and go to a on-air station if you're not listening to us on an on-air station, and make sure that that you are aware that you're able to receive National Weather Service Emergency Broadcast System alerts and seek shelter if need be. We're going to continue to cut in as these alerts come through to let our listeners know what's going on as we get them. Going back here to this. Issue with the dealerships, the grand total of dealerships being cut in the country by General Motors is 1,100, and that is on top of the 789 dealerships that Chrysler is cutting.
Yeah, I believe that Chrysler was about 800.
Yeah, it's crazy, and it's this is really going to affect. I mean, guys, I can't say this enough. We are talking about. We are talking about losing
jobs, losing jobs in America.
Well, losing jobs, losing tax revenue.
Yeah,
it affects everyone. Of the size of the economy.
It's going to hit everyone because almost every single industry is affected by that, either by credit issuers you know, for a bank or for a loan, for an auto loan, for to the parts that actually go into making them, to the workers, and then ultimately to the sellers, people who sell automobiles. You know what? If people aren't buying and the industry is dying, which at this point it is, then ultimately everyone in America is going to be hit by this. And we're going to, you know, kind of suffer. I don't know if it's going to be intermediate, or, you know, for the short term or for long term, but everyone is going to suffer yet again. And hopefully, you know, I just pray that we all can recover from this fairly short.
And they are. And I'd be interested in hearing from the listeners here. Where do you blame? Where do you pin the bulk of the blame for this? Is it the American people? Is it our fault for our consumerism? Is it the corporation's fault? Do you blame the government? Do you blame the oil industry? So, you know, please give us some feedback here. Let us know what you think, and maybe we can get your comment on the air.
888-228-4494. 888-228-4494. We're going to continue breaking up this conversation as these alerts come in. The National Weather Service has issued a tornado watch for the following, you know, it's almost the entire state of Indiana, but we're going to read the counties off to you anyway. Indiana, Benton, Blackford, Boone, Carroll, Cass, Clinton, Delaware, Fayette, Fountain, Franklin, Fulton, Grant, Hamilton, Hancock, Hendricks, Henry, Howard, Huntington, Jasper, Jay, Johnson, Madison, Marion, Miami, Montgomery, Morgan, Newton, Park, Pulaski, Putnam, Randolph, Rush, Shelby, Tippecanoe, Tipton, Union, Vermilion, Wabash, Warren, Wayne, Wells, and White. Basically, it's the entire state of Indiana is currently under a tornado watch from the National Weather Service. Once again, if you are in these areas, please make sure you're tuning into an on-air radio and you are able to listen to alerts. These are rapidly forming storms. It is currently sunny and 88 degrees in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and they are under a tornado watch. So it is something to be very wary of. I'm sorry, they're under a severe thunderstorm watch. So they are something to be wary of. So that you are aware that these storms are approaching, even though the weather may look good in your area right now, it looks like it can change very rapidly. It's a pretty violent storm system marching across the Midwest of the United States right now. If you are anywhere in the state of Indiana at this point, you should be tuning into National Weather Service Radio, NOAA Radio, or something like that. So, with that said, we will once again return to our regular scheduled broadcasting. This issue with the auto dealers, my question is it going to get worse and better? But going right into your point where you were asking where do people think the blame is, we have a tweet from Birdie Numnuns. Says, GM and Chrysler were let down by the ownership. No foresight. And they ignored the rest of the world. I don't know how much I buy that, because the rest of the world has been caught up in this tidal wave as well. There are, I was going to say Saab, but Saab's part of GM, so it's kind of a bad idea. Even Toyota to Mercedes, pretty much universally, involved and bailed out the auto industry.
Like I said before, I think it's a two-part issue. Was there an issue with Detroit? I'm sure there are issues with Detroit. At the time that we were producing massive amounts of SUVs, did we think that was really a good idea? At the time people were buying them, but it was well known that you're buying something that guzzles gasoline, you're buying something that risks flipping over, you're buying something that is, looking for a term here. It is conspicuous consumption. It is, there's a look at me factor in this. There was a level of irresponsibility to it. Now, whether or not Detroit had a leadership role in that, or where they were just following what the market wanted, I'd say that they are certainly in more trouble than Toyota's in right now, even though Toyota is in trouble. And now they're having to face what they've known all along. They need a quality, efficient, reliable product that also appeals to consumers. Not an easy thing, but doable. This is what Honda and Toyota have been about for years.
Well, speaking of Honda and Toyota, I can't help but bring this up because we have a vested interest in this. Well, we had a vested curiosity.
Vested curiosity.
Honda Insight has brought back the Honda Insight, which I jokingly call the Honda Prius.
No, the new one definitely.
It looks very much like Toyota Prius, but it's got a really space-age dashboard to it, but I digress. They seem to be going out of their way to make the four-door hybrid family sedan affordable. I don't know what I think it was $16,000 or something like that on Auto Trader.
Yeah, so I remember when those first came out, they were not by any stretch of the imagination affordable. Although, you know, their prices were comparable to some of the other vehicles people were buying. Although back then it was closer to $30,000 rather than $20,000 purchase price. And there were waiting lists for these vehicles. Of course, we've seen the whole $4 or $5 gasoline come and go.
Maybe come back again.
Thankfully, it left.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, we say that to one degree, but to another, you know, people there was a shift in people's usage, and I think that that's kind of we're starting to see the SUVs back on the road again. And
how many times do we have to learn this lesson? I remember the 1970s and the 1980s,
which goes right back to what I was saying about accountability. The theme of the show tonight is accountability. Is that we are responsible for this. We know better than to go out and buy a Hummer. We know better than to buy an SUV. And if you are listening to me now, and you try to come up with some reason to justify your SUV, barring you living off-road, having a job that's living off-road, you know, when they show that commercial.
Having to go fight a war, i.e. the Hummers.
Well,
the Hummer's vehicle.
When they show that commercial, the person is driving in the snow, and then they stop. I think it was a Suzuki commercial. And they stop the truck, and they decide they don't want to be on the road anymore. And they just hang a right, and they start going up the mountain.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Yes, because this happens every day on our way to work. I used to say that people buy
in the city, a lot of mountains we have to traverse. Yes. A lot of mountains.
People buy a car for what they do occasionally, not what they do all the time.
Well, I have a good way to put it. We talk often about it's important to vote. It's also equally as important in our society is how you vote with your dollar. You can talk all the talk in the world that if you go pay some company to do exactly what you're talking against, it's not going to do any good whatsoever.
What do you mean?
How you vote with your dollar. Are you buying something responsible? Are you shopping at Walmart with that dollar while you're saying, I don't like the way jobs are going to China? Well, they're not going to listen to your voice as much as they're going to listen to where you put your money, what you're spending on. They follow trends. You know, does it matter to Walmart that we complain about jobs being sent to China? No. Would it matter to them if we stopped shopping there? Definitely. They would hear that loud and clear.
Yeah, but yet, no matter how much we talk about Walmart, they people, and we actually run ads. As a matter of fact, we'll probably do it there in a minute or so.
Are we over time on our ad?
Huh?
Are we over time on our ad?
Yeah, we are. So you know what? With that, let's go ahead and run the speaking of Walmart. Let's go ahead and
speak of the devil.
And we'll be back in 33.
Have you added up all the hidden costs behind Walmart's prices? The estimated $1.8 billion taxpayers shell out for health care because Walmart doesn't cover their employees. The lost wages of 1.6 million women who had to take Walmart to court to get paid the same as men. The countless manufacturing jobs lost while America's largest corporation became America's biggest importer of Chinese goods. Behind Walmart's profits, the middle class pays the price. America can't afford it any longer.
This is Common Sense, and that was our actual Walmart ad that was so well-timed because we were just discussing the whole Walmart thing and accountability of the United States, and as Mike was saying, voting with our dollar and how people do shop at Walmart, even though Walmart is single-handedly responsible for the loss of manufacturing jobs in the United States, loss of millions of them, and we buy into this nonsense that we're saving money. We're not. Cheap is expensive. That's the saying you like to say.
Yes, cheap is expensive.
And you know, so we shop at Walmart, but the mom and pop store closes down, and the manufacturing jobs go overseas. And then what happens to us as a nation? It really is a pretty serious issue.
Yeah, the cheap is expensive saying actually came from buying something that was low quality and then having to put so much effort into repairing it or trying to get it to work that you actually out more money or more effort than if you would just put more money up front. But, you know, unfortunately, people are extraordinarily sensitive to how much money things cost up front, and often they will make poor decisions based on that.
And,
you know, it's
and
better
is,
to buy. Oh, go ahead, Chris.
We as a society are used to living off of credit and cheap. Hey, you know what? If you can buy it now and pay later, either 6 months or 12 months or, you know, 3 years, then we do it. Why? Because we think in our minds that we're saving money, or at least it's just not kind of coming home and hitting us in the pocketbook at that point.
So
and
true.
So we kind of, we buy into that, and we've lost the entire lessons that our parents, well, not parents, but our grandparents and some of us great-grandparents learned with the Great Depression, which is save. Don't live off credit. We're in this crunch right now because everything, all these industries, they were all living off of not what they had, but what they were going to make, what they could sacrifice to, you know, to buy now, pay a little bit, but not pay the full price. And now, all of a sudden, when that has, the bottom has fallen out from under us, now everyone is in dire straits.
You know, it's interesting to note that, you know, as I completely agree with you, Americans have been living off credit and have not been saving enough, and yet we're told now that if we start saving now, we're going to be saving too much, and we're not going to be putting enough into our economy. So
it's pendulum swing.
It's just the damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah, that's very true.
For the corporate world, running off of credit is a normal means of operation, but when you're looking at individuals and the average American, I don't know if this has changed, but the last I checked, at $8,000 in credit card debt, credit card companies have been sneaking the rate of that debt up. I mean, it's credit card debt is about the worst you could have as far as what you pay for it. And it's surprising. Like you were saying, you know, somebody can get something for $20 a month. They're much, much more likely to buy it than if they have to pay $500 for it up front. But what I don't think they realize is they buy that on a credit card. They make payments on that credit card. They might be paying twice the list price of that item. What if that item, that $500 item listed at $1,000? You would never buy it, yet you'll charge it and make those payments, and you will be out the $1,000 for it. So in that regard, we make ourselves poorer by, you know, impatiently wanting stuff now rather than saving the money for it. But
we
in fact, mind rent on the economy. You know, if we stop spending now, we start saving, our economy is going to stall even more.
Well, one of the things we're getting comments on Twitter talking about the GM situation says, the world went with forces on the fuel-efficient vehicles. America didn't. Other car makers are in trouble, but most won't be bankrupt like GM. Well, there's a couple reasons why. Most of other car companies aren't as old as GM, so they don't have the quote-unquote legacy cost of General Motors. Therefore, their overhead in and of itself is lower. But they're still in trouble, and they're still being bailed out by their governments. So
the
young companies are in trouble.
But even within our companies, has Ford accepted any bailout money yet? So
we have put
you can't blame
demands on those industries. We have put demands on those industries when we haven't put the demands on the banking industries who we paid, you know, gazillions of dollars for their bailouts so that they could get, you know, new rugs and fancy offices. And other countries are bailing their automobile industries out.
Stop. I'm not going to get away with that. We didn't pay $700 billion for rugs and fancy offices.
Oh no! I'm just saying that they have abused their privilege while the auto industry has had demands put on them and restrictions. Like, you know, okay, well, sure, we'll entertain your idea of getting an auto industry bailout as long as you first come to us with a strategic plan of how you're going to then help yourself. How are you going to help your own company?
Well, the problem with banking. Did I cut you off?
I'm good.
Okay. Oh, the problem with banking is that everything is dependent on banking. So that's kind of where they have us on a short leash. Every industry is dependent on cash flow and banking. And when you have a crisis that severe, even when bankers themselves are to blame and the company's own policies got them there to a degree, you still have to bail them out. You will freak everything.
You're right. Yes, you're right in that regard. It's just that other countries, as I'm not sure if it was Jim or if it was you were saying, like, other countries are bailing their auto industries out.
across the board while we are not. Why? Because, well, at this point, the American taxpayers, I don't think they can even stomach another, oh, by the way, we have an X hundred billion dollar bailout coming. You know, we would almost be in the streets at this point.
We can only go to that well so many times. And along those lines, they were talking about how much more credit can we get. And again, comparing this to the state level, here in our state, they're looking at requesting that the federal government back up California's borrowing because California really has no more credit left. They can't borrow anymore. Their credit rating's slipping. People don't trust that they'll pay it back. So now they want the federal government to back that up. But how much more borrowing can the federal government do?
Well,
you're right,
because
the American government, their own, was it AAA rating, credit rating score is almost in jeopardy now because of how much we've borrowed and how much we already owe.
Well, it is, it's a constant battle I think we're going to have. And I think the bottom line on this entire discussion is that we as a nation got ourselves into this mess. It wasn't just any one particular factor. And we're going to have to get out. And the political nonsense of pointing and sniping really needs to stop. We need to work together as a nation to get out of this. And that's a lot more difficult to do than we think, because we get caught up in these political issues that tend to divide the country, whether regardless of what the issue is. And we have too many vested interests in trying to divide the country, which is why we got into this, what we talked about a little bit earlier. We can bring it up again for a little bit now, which is when we get caught up in these single issue politics of finding one issue and then turning it into a wedge issue. And it always becomes one party versus the other. Whether it's, the GM issue, they're trying to blame on one side's blaming Barack, the other side's blaming the Republicans for what was going on with the Bush administration, right down to the wedge issue that exploded over the last 7 or 8 days with the whole gay marriage issue. There's too many issues in politics that are wedge issues. And, I'm going to bring back up the gay marriage issue here for a moment, in that it was a wedge issue in 2004. It is an ongoing wedge issue now. We have, to me, and I'm not gay. And I'm not saying that because I feel the need to proclaim it. I'm saying that because I'm trying to say I don't have a dog in this hunt. I'm not gay. I think I know a few people who may be, but I don't ask them, and I don't really care. So for me personally, I don't give a damn, is really what it comes down to. But we have Carrie from Cincinnati is a guest who's on line two right now. If you could go ahead and cue him up here, Seth. We have a guest on line two who I believe does have a dog in this hunt. And I think that it's kind of important for people to hear from individuals who do have a vested stake in this, because this is the voice, this is the face of what we're talking about here. We're talking about taking an entire demographic of people and saying, you don't have the right to do what I have the right to do. And I know that there are competing issues, and I'm going to ask Mike to take the opposing side for the sake of argument on this issue, because I want to kind of have a little back and forth here and talk about it. Carrie, you on the radio?
Hi there.
How are you?
I'm doing good, thanks. Appreciate the program. Appreciate you asking to call in.
Well, I asked you to come on tonight because I know that this has been an issue that's kind of exploded to the front page thanks to some young dimwit in California's decision to put words to thought and really try to create what she perceives to be a moral wedge issue and ram this down people's throats, so to speak. And I'm curious to know, from your point of view, how this affects you personally, and what, let's start there. How does this affect you personally, and what is it that you seek?
Let's start with, her comment. Her comment was fine, and frankly, her comment was irrelevant. I don't care. Obviously I'm gay, so frankly, I don't care much about the whole Miss USA pageant in the first place. But somebody who has put themselves out there as an activist in the community, Perez Hilton, frankly, it was a stupid question to ask in that forum. He asked it to be combative, and he's been, probably less of a friend of the community in the last 8-10 days since this thing broke then, you know, certainly she has. He did us no favors. You know, he did it to be a grandstanding celebrity. And, you know, frankly, her answer would have been fine if she had just left it there. You know, nobody would have really cared too much. You know, and he asked her, she gave an answer, and then he just, you know, went off and obliterated her afterwards. And that's really what started the whole firestorm. I don't think she started it as much as he did. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
You know, as far as how this affects me personally, my life partner, spouse, whatever you want to call him, and I have been together for 17 years now. We're getting up there in age. We're 42 and 52. You know, we're beginning to think about things like retirement. We're beginning to think about things like end of life and the things that come with any, you know, aging empty nester couple. And we have lots of concerns. We're in Ohio. You were talking about, you know, the 2004 wedge issue, and certainly this was the wedge issue that ran the election in 2004, and it was Ohio that tipped the balance. In 2004, Ohio passed the most restrictive amendment to the to their state constitution of any state in the union. Not only did it ban civil marriage for same-sex partners, but it also banned civil unions. And in addition, it banned the creation of any contracts that sought to approximate the benefits of marriage on same-sex partners. So, living will...
That's almost unbelievable. This is Ohio?
That's in Ohio.
Wow.
So issues with wills and powers of attorney and things like that have to be done very, very carefully in order to protect our assets should anything happen to us, to our health or to our lives. So just that the security in our homes and our belongings and our lives are at risk simply because we're a same-sex couple. In regards to, you know, the political face of it, the emotional face, the public face of it, you know, the words matter. Syntax matters. You know, it's commonly referred to as gay marriage, but frankly, it's just marriage. And, you know, what we're standing for, what we're fighting for, and frankly, what we're demanding at this point, we're tired of waiting. We're tired of waiting. Is equality. It really boils down to one word. You and I talked about this the other night. It really boils down to one word. Equality. And, you know, in a lot of the blogs and a lot of the tweets, you know, we hear, why can't you just be happy with civil unions, you know, if they provide the same rights, you know. Besides the questions of, you know, separate but equal that keep coming up, the thing is that's a null point at this point, because equal rights under the term civil unions don't exist either. You know, I'm happy to have that conversation if we finally get to the point of where we're sitting with, you know, equal legal benefits and rights and privileges under the law. Until then, you know, it's just much easier to refer to it as marriage equality.
Well, the opponents of a civil union or gay marriage would say that you have the same rights as I do. That
I can marry a woman just like you can.
Exactly. That's what the opponents will say. And I don't want to sound insensitive, but I want to lay this out there and give you the chance to bat these arguments back. That I think my personal belief, I think this is a discussion that should be had. I think, frankly, it's a complete waste of time. And the reason I say that I think it's a discussion that should be had, and simultaneously say it's a waste of time, is because obviously this country or segments of this country are going to resist this. So therefore, we have to have the conversation to get to where we need to get to. However, the reason I say it's a waste of time is because, as was stated on a, I believe it was Bill Maher last week, every civil rights march in this country that's ever existed has always won. It's going to happen.
It's
one state after the next, it's happening.
it's a little bit difficult. No, it's a little bit difficult for gays to actually even have an equal opportunity for that. When you have people like Representative Virginia Fox coming out and calling the Matthew Shepard hoax, the Matthew Shepard death a hoax, and she actually came out and said, and I'm quoting from the Huffington Post, "I would also like to point out that there was a bill, the hate crimes bill, that called the Matthew Shepard bill its name after a very unfortunate incident that happened where a young man was killed. But we know that the young man was killed in the commitment of a robbery. It wasn't because he was gay." And, you know, people just deny incidents like that so that they can further their own cause and deny gays equal rights and equal opportunity.
Well, this is coming up from Twitter. Hippie Randall says he agrees with the caller wholeheartedly, and love is love, get over it. And I'm assuming he's talking to the right wing when he says that. And you know how I feel on this issue because we had a conversation on Twitter a few days ago about this. I don't understand why the right wing seems to give a damn, other than to feel morally superior to others. I just don't understand why this is another one of these things. Like, why is there a debate on this? Why do we care? Me, I said in the intro, I don't give a damn. If someone wants, to me, the way I look at government in general is that government should get the hell out of my way unless they can show that something is going to occur that negatively impacts me or society as a whole. So it seems to me that we should be allowing this, and California, where this whole thing erupted in the first place, is under very heated debate because of the Proposition 8 issue out there, and there's a question as to whether or not it's constitutional. And the interesting question here, and I'm not sure if this is going to affect other states, but there's an interesting constitutional question, which is, can you repeal a right that already exists? You can't. So the question then becomes, did this right already exist under the law in California? So I am curious to know how you feel about that. Do you feel like this is an issue that already existed in Ohio, and then when they went and they made the constitutional amendment, they then took that right away? Or do you feel that it prevented it from coming in the first place? What do you think about that?
Well, according to the legislature here, it was never a right that existed. It was never a right that had been determined to be applicable to all people. Marriage had a long time ago been legislatively defined as the union of a man and a woman. But the fight in Ohio really started back in about 92, right after Columbus, the capital city, passed a non-discrimination ordinance at the city level. Cincinnati tried to do it, and it actually got repealed, and it passed, but then it got repealed, and the city charter was, like, I think one of the first in the country, if I recall correctly, to actually name a group of people that would be excluded from the human rights ordinance. And from there, it just really took off. And then as the question, you know, was made real popular coming up to the 2004 election, they got enough signatures to put it on referendum and define it as I explained it to earlier. So, in Ohio, it's never been a right.
If you could clarify me for a little bit, you were talking about a law that was passed in Iowa and then they were excluded from it. I didn't quite follow you there. What exactly was passed and then what was repealed and why and how did that affect the gay community?
It wasn't in Iowa. It was in Cincinnati. It was the city's human rights ordinance passed at the city level by the city council. And
that said basically what did the ordinance?
The original ordinance read to include sexual orientation and gender identity in their non-discrimination policy.
As so, far as, you know, hiring and all that type of thing.
As far as employment and housing and,
right.
and anything that was regulated at the city level. Lots of people in the city vicinity got all up in arms about it and managed to get it on referendum to, A, repeal that from the ordinance and then amend the city charter, which is the city's constitution, if you will, to specifically exclude it.
Federally, is that already...
Are they already a protected class?
Right. Can you legally discriminate against people in hiring and appointment and things like that? I mean, why would the state go to add this and then want to repeal it? Hasn't that already been decided?
No, it hasn't. It hasn't been decided at the federal level. There is legislation that's been stalled and held and forgotten to include it in the federal EOE, Equal Opportunity Employment Act. There's legislation currently that's trying to get sexual orientation included in their hate crime statutes, but no, there's no protection federally, and some states have passed their own human rights ordinances. In California, it's illegal to discriminate. And they take theirs beyond the city level. If you're a business serving the public, you can't discriminate in whom you serve.
Yes, it's kind of ironic, is it not, that it's illegal to discriminate, and yet they pass a law that discriminates. It's...
Right. And,
different issues. Discriminating in employment and in housing is, and then whether or not you're going to recognize marriage.
I would just argue that discrimination is discrimination.
Well, then you could stretch discrimination into anything that you wanted to. I mean, if I'm hiring a pool of candidates and I know anything that I do to differentiate one from the other would be discrimination if you want to take that out all the way. But unfortunately, I often don't know where the line between the state law and the federal law is. And I know in California, as far as housing, as far as appointments, as far as hiring, it's very strict. You're not allowed to do such things. And from what you're telling me here, that in other states, if you knew that you were discriminated against in appointment or in housing or in hiring or such, because of your sexual orientation, that you would have no recourse?
Correct. Okay. Or at least that's the way it is in Ohio. And I mean, and currently that's determined at a state level because there are no federal protections there.
Right.
But currently in Ohio, it is legal to deny you work at the city or state level because you're homosexual.
Well, that's
or,
a whole
or because
issue.
Because that's your gender identity is perceived to be something
that just
different.
Seems. I'm sorry. That
for
just
work.
Seems
right.
It's surprising to me that that's not a federal violation. That's
sexual
news to
orientation
me.
Is not a protected federal class. I would have never thought that.
Well, I think had that been able to have been accomplished years ago, probably most of this conversation this evening would be moot. Because I think once that's gained and once there is a determined level of equality, I think the abilities to get these pushed through our legislatures and our courts is frankly going to be much easier. It's going to establish precedent.
Let me ask you. You said that you thought that Perez Hilton and little Dingbat that you don't care about Dingbat, but Perez Hilton kind of sets you guys back. Do you really think that's true? And I'll tell you why I'm asking that. It seems to me like little Dingbat over there, becoming the face of the intolerant, as cute as that face is to look at, really showed an ugly side. And people look
Carrie.
At this. I'm done calling her by name. I'm done giving her free press. She's Dingbat or Bimbo. That's what we go with.
And I appreciate that since I'm a Carrie calling in talking about it. So
exactly.
it seems to me that putting the spotlight on the issue, does that necessarily hurt the cause? I mean, do you not feel that the country has kind of moved? I don't know that this is a left-right issue. It seems to become one. But I don't know that it truly is a left-right issue. And I think it's more of just a kind of personal conscience issue. You know, I made the comment that I'm heterosexual and I don't understand the desires to be a homosexual. But I'm not supposed to, because I'm not. That's not me. That's not how I'm wired. And so I choose not to be myself. That does not mean that I should then tell the next person, you can't be either, any more than the other way around.
Except there are already people who are doing that, and they are distorting what the gay and lesbian people are trying to work for. They are sitting there saying, oh, well, if we legalize gay marriage, then that's just a slippery slope that's going to lead to polygamy, or leading to legalizing polygamy and or bestiality and having sex with turtles and dolphins and whatnot.
Who was the moron that said that?
Pat Robertson.
This is a politician that has sex with turtles. Which I
didn't know that was possible.
You know what? I don't want to know. Let's just not even go
down. You know what? Most people didn't know because, you know, it's an act of desperation, and it's something that, again, that if one person says it, it almost seems to become a talking point, and we all know how talking points go, which is
reasonable.
Repeat.
Or semi-reasonable, at least. Let's kind of try and get this car back on the road. I don't understand the mentality, and I would love for a Republican or a GOPer or a conservative, whatever you want to call yourself today, I would love for one of these guys to call in if they've got the guts to do so. And explain to me why it is that you give a damn as to what someone else does. The number here is 1-888-228-4494. I'd love to see someone call in and explain this to me, because I honestly, I'm not asking the question to be facetious. I truly don't understand this desire to compel another demographic into my way of thinking or my sexuality. I just don't get that. Why can we just not leave people the hell alone and let them live their lives? And what is this obsession with Republican Party in my bedroom? I understand my obsession with my bedroom. I don't understand the Republican Party's obsession with my bedroom. And whether you are a woman's right to choose
If you want an honest answer on that,
I would appreciate one if you have one.
I think they are. Yes, I do have a.
I'm sorry. I got to break in here. Breaking news from the Twitterverse. It was Rick Santorum. I don't know why we're surprised. Who came up with the whole sex with turtles thing?
Oh, Rick Santorum.
Yeah.
Very, very good. I think when politicians take that stance, it's to appeal to people who consider themselves to be religious and who claim that they are against it for religious purposes.
Yes, that's Pat Robertson, one of them, and he leads or represents a large part of Christian majority on the right. And for him to get up there and say...
I think he'd be more than Christian. I mean, if you go... I mean, as far as his standpoint, yes, but I think that in a number of religions of... You know, these people are famous for jumping up on the grandstand and claiming the moral high ground. But I think that's something that's done to appeal to that group.
What I'd like to
point out there is what I find really ironic is that for those who object based on their religious principle, Christianity, for anyone who identifies themselves as Christian, and any other religion that somebody may have converted to, surely they understand that is a lifestyle choice. You know, nobody forces anybody to be a Christian. To be a Christian as it's understood by most people in reading the Judeo-Christian scriptures, it's a choice. These folks are choosing to define for everybody else how other people should live based on their choice. And then they call us out and say, we've chosen to live this aberrant lifestyle. And why should we legalize, their aberrant choice? Well, they've never been able to prove that, you know, sexual orientation is not an innate feature.
Right.
And I would challenge anybody to please define for me, especially, you know, my heterosexual counterparts and friends, please define for me when it was that you decided, damn, I'm going to wake up and I'm going to be attracted to women only. I just can't wait to get a hold of that. You know, it just, you said it precisely the way I've always used it earlier, Jim, and that's just the way you're wired. You know,
exactly.
You came through adolescence and boom, man, that got to you.
For Christians, if I can just interject here real quick, for Christians, because I am a Christian, I find it ironic that other Christians who are on the right and say that being gay is wrong, I find it ironic that they can there and be judge, jury, and executioner for what is and what is not morally correct when Jesus himself and God do not control us. If you believe in the Bible and what it says, God gave us free choice. He doesn't control us. So how, as a human being, can you define and determine what other people do? It's just absurd to me.
I want to
read
it.
And the Christian scripture itself says, whatsoever is not of faith is sin. So as a Christian, if you truly believe that it's not a part of your faith and you believe it's against your faith, then for you it's a sin. And that's fine. And I'm happy to debate theology. I've studied it for a long time with anybody on the issue. But what this really comes down to and what the whole thing that we've been talking about is civil equality. We live in a secular society. Regardless of those who identify themselves as Christian or as part of any other religion, our government was set up to be a secular government without respect to each individual's religious freedoms and choices. So this isn't a religious issue when it comes to discussing civil equality and equal protection under our law and our Constitution.
Absolutely agreed.
I want to read a quote here because I think it's important to understand when we talk about Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell and the likes of these conservative Christians. I want to read a quote here to you. September 13th, 2001. I really believe that the pagans and the abortionists and the feminists and the gays and the lesbians who are actively trying to make that an alternative lifestyle, the ACLU, People for the American Way, all of them who are trying to secularize America, I point the finger in their face and say, you helped this happen. Pat Robertson, I totally concur. He was referring to the September 11th terrorist attacks on our country. This is the kind of extremism that we are dealing with.
Extremism, no matter what religion it comes from. And as far as I'm concerned, that kind of rhetoric and that kind of vile hatred is no different than Osama bin Laden, you know, talking about killing the infidel. It is exactly the same kind of religious fundamentalism that has done to do nothing but terrorize and destroy people.
I completely agree. And it seems to me that we have to do something about this. We've got a couple of tweets here. One person is saying that it was, I stand corrected here, it's apparently Bill O'Reilly and not Santorum that made the statement. We've got, I got to thank you very much for calling, Kerry, and I wish you the best of luck in this, and you have my full throated support. I think that
mine
we have
well.
To,
we
have to.
I really appreciate that, guys. You know, if you can give me just a second more.
Sure.
You know, Jim, you said that you started out a conversation tonight with you wanted, you know, someone else's point of view who had a dog in this fight because you really didn't see yourself having a dog in this fight. But the fact is you do. You're an American citizen. And if they can tell me what I can and can't do with my body, if they can tell me who I can and can not be emotionally bonded to, if they can tell a woman when she can and when she can't have kids and how she has to incubate them, if they can do all of those things to these different classes of people, they can do it to anybody. Everybody has a dog in this fight when it comes to civil equality.
That is 100% true, and I do kind of stand corrected on that. Obvious. I was talking about the obvious when I said that.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much for calling, Carrie. I'm really glad that we're able to give you some airtime here and kind of get this issue out, since it is kind of in the front of everyone's mind lately.
And I appreciate you giving it some airtime.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for calling in.
Bye.
Well, that was. It's interesting to hear the actual voice of those who are directly impacted by the immediate issue. It's kind of different when you put a human face on it, when you talk to people directly. So we're getting close to wrapping up the show here. We got about 3 or 4 minutes left. I'm going to ask Seth to please cue up the final tweet spot. And we had something I want to discuss here real quickly, and that was I wanted to spend a little more time on it, and we're going to get it right at the end of the tweet spot. We're going to talk about a commentary that was it's out on CNN.com right now. We're going to go ahead and roll the final tweet spot, and we'll be back in 2 minutes.
Welcome to my tweet spot. Don't get your hopes up. It's me, Gotta Laugh, from the Political Carnival blog, and here I am to recap the week in politics via Twitter. So many tweets, so little time. Nerd Prom was Twitter's nickname for the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Tons of tweets came in. J.C. Christian from the blog Jesus General had a bunch of them. Moved on to Nerd Prom Garden Party. Scored meth from Todd Palin. It's going to be a good day. Cheney's still hiding in a tree at Nerd Prom Garden Party. He's caught a squirrel and is beer boarding it. Can't watch. Said hi to Hannity. Asked me to help him do mustard patrol at Nerd Prom Dinner. Paul Rykoff tweeted, just got mistaken for Joe the Plumber. Really getting sick of that. MSNBC's Tamron Hall had a little incident. Just got to D.C. for the big White House dinner. Got hit in the head on the train by a coworker. I think it was an accident. It was a huge piece of luggage to my head. I think it knocked me out. Now, with apologies to Meghan McCain, allow me to do my best Laura Ingraham impression of Meg Mac, who tweeted, I have the most talented hair and makeup people in the universe. XOXOXO. White House Correspondents' Dinner is a cluster so far. OMFG, Wanda Sykes just made a joke about Obama's nipples. Anna Marie Cox said, best so far. As Andrew Sullivan introduced his husband, his mother-in-law was crying tears of joy. Suck it, National Organization for Marriage. It matters. Someone who calls himself Conservadick said, I think I saw Michael Bloomberg and Janine Garofalo both get stuffed on by Ann Coulter. One tweeter, Future Directed, said, they interview Richard Belzer, and Helen Thomas goes by without mention. Is this the White House Correspondents' Dinner? Yeah, my sentiments exactly. Hey, should I feel bad that nobody asked me to Nerd Prom? Jim was going to, but he got scooped up by Michelle Bachmann. Kidding. I'm kidding, Jim. Take it away.
Scooped up by Michelle Bachmann. Oh, yeah, I'm going to give it to you later. Coming back. Oh, God. I hate when she does that. I want to talk real quickly about this a commentary on CNN.com. I think this is something we really have to watch out for. As we move forward with this whole nomination of a Supreme Court justice. Ruben Navarrete Jr., remember the San Diego Union Tribune editorial board, wrote a column where he talks about the White House saying that the top court pick is the president's alone. And basically what that is coming from is President Obama essentially told people, don't bother lobbying him on the Supreme Court justice nominees, that he's going to make up his own mind as he goes along. And in this commentary that he writes, he talks about how people should be picked out of the best and not necessarily a minority. And what is very important to me is it's one paragraph that he writes. His second to last paragraph, he says, by the way, some pundits are saying the odds are good that a Latino will get the nod. I hope I'm wrong, but I predict Latinos will be shut out again. That the administration will expect to get credit for at least including a couple of token Latinos' names on the short list. After all, I suspect that there was the whole point. That was the whole point of including them. What this gentleman is getting to here,
wow,
while first saying that we should pick someone based on their both qualifications, if that person ends up not being Latino, as far as he's concerned, Latinos are getting shut out. What I find very interesting about this whole thing is that regardless of your minority status, whichever minority you're part of, it's the Supreme Court that has seen the advancement of these rights. And we as a nation need to quit being so much of, I have to have someone who's just like me in order to support what I'm doing. And I think that we should really be, you know, careful about going
people
down
need
this
to
road.
Remember that discrimination is discrimination. Something I kind of pick up nowadays, as much as I can understand, you know, people wanting to be represented, is that there is no good discrimination. Well, we are going to pick this type of person this time, and that's going to be more inclusive, and we're going to discriminate against everybody else because we need to pick this type of a person. That's no good. That type of thing is not allowed in such things as housing and job applications. And we were just on this topic as far as
the
gay perspective.
I think we just have to all kind of take a step back and wait till the president actually names a nominee.
And again, the idea that somebody can't represent me if they're not my race.
Yeah,
does the president of the United States not represent me? They've taken it a bit far.
We have to kind of resist this. We should all kind of take a step back and see. And maybe next week's show we'll get into it. This has been Common Sense. Thank you, Chris in New Jersey, Mike in California. This is Jim Allen in Washington, D.C. And we are going to sign off here. We thank everyone on Twitter and our callers who joined us for the day. Greatly appreciate you. We are here every single week at 3:55 p.m. Eastern. I'm sorry, Pacific. I do this all the time. 3:55 p.m. Pacific and 6:55 p.m. Eastern. And we look forward to seeing you again next week. Write the number down. It's the same number every week, 888-228-4494. You can see us on Twitter at Jim Alger. We have a couple of other Twitter accounts I want to give you guys real quick before we go. At Mike on Air, at Chris on Air are our two guests here that are here all the time. You can see them as well on Twitter. Thank you very much, folks, and keep it real.
Have a good night.